kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing today?
I'm alive and kicking, but I'm sick.
You're sick?
So, I am. Do you hear that?
Fucking now what? Every week it's always, something with you.
I'm always sick. Like, I have the immune system of a potato. It's pretty terrible.
What am I going to do with you?
Ignore me and introduce the guest?
That makes sense. I was going to say put you down, but introducing the guest works as well.
I want to live.
Joining us from Breakfall, Mike Keough. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing pretty good. I'm getting over something. I was sick. I'm sympathetic. I was sick too.
Am I going to have to put both of you down tonight?
Hopefully not.
Did you go to a convention? Did you have Conflu?
You know what? We went to PAX West, and I escaped unscathed somehow. I did not get Conflu. It's like the only time I've ever gone to something and not got sick.
It'll never happen for you.
Yeah, it'll never happen again.
Absolutely. You are so fucked the next time you go to a convention.
Yeah, probably.
You are so screwed. You're going to catch everything.
Going to go home with pneumonia, diabetes, just start pulling random diseases out of a hat.
Something's gonna happen.
Never going to a convention again.
My bad.
That'll teach you. That really.
We're off to a good start here. Thanks, guys.
I have a feeling I'm gonna like this episode. Anyway, you were here from Breakfall. You were here to talk about your new game, Pizza Titan Ultra. For the people who don't know what this game is, explain it to us. Give us the sales pitch.
Yeah, so Pizza Titan Ultra is a game about giant robot pizza delivery, and I think it's pretty rad. You're basically running around in a 10-story mech. The mech contains a pizzeria. You have an entire restaurant in your chest, and so you are moving through a city, sort of futuristic city. It's Earth's first spaceport, and you are cooking hot and fresh pizza pies en route to your delivery so that when you arrive, it's super, super fresh, and it also is super efficient because you don't have to wait for the pizza to cook, then deliver it. You cook it as you're going. This does result in a bit of destruction of the city. And then, of course, there's sort of like an obligatory army of evil purple robots trying to shoot you down while you're doing this. Obviously. So that's, in a nutshell, Pizza Titan Ultra. And it's sort of Breakfall's insane love letter to a lot of weird 90s pop culture and just madness. It's got a whole story. We wanted to focus on like a single player game again after Starwall was multiplayer. But we wanted to also keep sort of, you know, the insanity going, because Neon Narwhals in Space did pretty well for us. So there's actually been a bit of a tie-in here where the city was built by narwhals and by Starwhals, I should say, and a couple of the customers that show up are even Starwhals. So there's some crossover.
It's nice that you bring up Starwall, because I had some of your cohorts on the show a couple of years ago, and the first question I asked, I have to ask again, what were you on when you thought of this game, and where can I get it?
just us, just our brains,
high on life.
We're not offering them up. I don't know. It was a weird process. As I like to tell the story, we were sort of torn between, we had a game we were working on. It was a little more serious than this. And it just wasn't, we wanted more fun factor or more relatable. So we talked about doing stuff like, you know, like Paperboy or Crazy Taxi, that's sort of more down to earth. And then a few people, especially me, I feel like I was leading the camp of like, but it has to have action roles and jetpacks and lasers. I liked that we were doing something with giant robots and crazy action. So we wound up kind of eventually someone just pitched like, why not both? And from there, we did like some, we just talked a little bit through that idea. One of the first things that got sort of concepted was just this quick doodle of a robot punching another side of a building, like from the interior of the building, like opening its giant robot hand and there being a tiny little pizza box in it. And so that actually exists more or less in the game still, because it just made us laugh so much. We basically went into production right away.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Now I have to mark that off of my notes because my question was literally what kind of drug fueled fever dream brought this game on.
So you know,
now I have to go put an X there because Joe beat me to it.
So funnily enough, our first game, which is like far and away the most normal, literally started with a fever dream. This is like way back, you know, in the like mid 2000s when Jason's like, I am tired of web development. I want to make a video game. I'm like, well, I worked on some video games. Let's collaborate on a video game. And we were looking for what to do. And one night I literally was, this is again, super sick. I'm making it sound like we were all sick all the time here. But I just had this crazy fever dream. I woke up in the middle of the night and like wrote this email to Jason being like, you know, we should do this thing about a kid in the snow. And it's like, the email I wrote was very, very close. Like it really described what the game became. And we toiled away on that for a long time. And it's on like a Steam Hidden Gems list. It's a super cute, adorable game. I'm glad we made, but it's way less overtly ridiculous than Starwall or Pizza Titan Ultra.
And what is the name of this one?
Marvin's Mittens.
Marvin's Mittens.
Sounds adorable.
It is adorable. The whole thing kind of looks like a children's storybook. I think a lot of people didn't know what to make of it because it looks like it might be for kids, but it's not like you can't give it to a really little kid because it's actually kind of challenging platforming. I don't know. Maybe they chip away and get through it. But it's just this platformer and there's no hazards. There's no enemies. It's just this sort of cheerful, wonderful thing where you're collecting magic snowflakes and you can always jump higher. It's actually inspired somewhat by Crackdown of all things, with the agility orbs. But yeah, it's just this whole, it was a very simple platformer game where you're just sort of constantly leveling up your own ability to jump higher and higher. And you set out every day from your home into your backyard and you have a toboggan and you zip around and there's adorable snow elves and magic. And it's very charming.
I'm going to define that and let number three play it because I'm pretty sure even though he says it's not for little kids, he'd probably smash it.
Do it. Yeah.
Any chance of that ever hitting consoles at all? I know you said it's an older game, but I'm curious.
I mean, I would love to do a re-release. And there is someone, a friend of Breakfall, who I worked with years ago, who actually helped us out with some of the porting for Pizza Titan Ultra, who wanted to just look at the project to sort of poke around. It was done in XNA. So our other games have all been built on Unity, which is much more portable. XNA is kind of, I don't know, like, I don't think we could just port the whole thing as is, but there's a distant and dim possibility of someone taking the art and almost rebuilding the game, like, as a project to test some tech they want to work on. But it's pretty unlikely. It's pretty, I mean, it's there, it's on Steam. I just don't know about reopening it and getting it to work on anything else.
Gotcha. It's nice to hear that there really is a game from Breakfall that was done in a fever dream.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not, I should say that, like, it's not the one you'd think. Like, if you look at the three of them.
Because Starwall, let's admit, that was a fucked up game. That was such a weird premise.
It sure was. Yeah, that was great. I left the game because it was a 48-hour game jam where we initially made the first version of Starwall, and I left the game jam because I'm like, I'm gonna do some sleep on this one, guys. So I, like, you know, I put in a good long day, but I was home in bed by, like, you know, 11 or something, very reasonable for game jam standards. And then the middle of the night I sort of woke up and I look over at my phone and I say, oh, I have a text. And the first message was, it's about narwhals now. And I was about to go back to sleep, sort of like smiling to myself, like, yeah, it is. And then I got another message being like, and it's in space. And I'm like, oh, I'm so excited for tomorrow morning. So that happened like overnight. So that one, there was exhaustion was probably a factor. But yeah, because we've been working on this floppy physics idea, like we kind of had a sense of what we were doing. But when I left on the first night, it was not about narwhals or set in space, and that just sort of happened overnight that night. So
what was it originally?
Oh, we talked about a few things, like unicorns or just even jousting, like knights with lances. Like, it was just sort of a like jousty thing, but we weren't quite sure what to do. But narwhals solved so many problems because now there weren't like legs and other limbs to worry about. Like, they could just sort of flop around flaccidly as they do in the game, and it made it so much funnier. So yeah,
there's a significant shortage of unicorn games.
This is also true. That's fair. Yep.
And in general, like I say on Xbox, but in general, we just need more unicorns.
Yeah, I had sort of an idea for a different kind of weird take. We did actually prototype something that I was calling before I knew that like Valve actually had that, like it's a thing in a game called Balloonicorns, which was going to be, I thought I was so clever for coming up with this brilliant pun, but they have those in Team Fortress already. So really? We couldn't use it. And the prototype was of dubious amounts of fun. I thought there was maybe something there, but we moved on to bigger and better things. But yeah, I'd make a game about unicorns. I'm down. I'd do it.
But Balloonicorns, I like that.
Balloonicorns, yeah. Yeah.
It's a pretty great pun.
Mm-hmm. I thought so.
So how did you guys go from Starwall to Pizza Titan Ultra? It is such a drastic shift in gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're really not the same thing at all. I guess we wanted to do, because Marvin's Mints, our first game, was, you know, a single player, like an experience, more an adventure. And we wanted to kind of return to that, revisit some ideas there. I don't really know how we decided, like, on a 3D thing and such a big production. It did really help that we sought and received some funding from the Ontario Media Development Corporation, now rebranded as Ontario Creates. So the province in which we live has some grants, which will give you a nice chunk of your budget. So we had some extra money. So we took some money we'd made with Starwall and got some of this nice government funding. And we used that to bring a whole bunch of other artists on board to help us. So like we had this sort of small core team of four or five people throughout development. And even that kind of cycled a bit. But then the credits has like over 20 people, I think, now. And like a lot of people came and just various artists we knew and additional programmers came for a while. Some people were just doing like a few hours a week. Some were part-time for more of the project. But yeah, we had a bit of assistance to make a bigger production. And we just kind of went for it and tried to figure out. I mean, even figuring out what the game actually was took a while. It's interesting. It's the opposite of Starwall, where it was a game jam game. We looked at this, we're like, this is super fun. Like after, you know, the first, whatever, 20 hours, we're like, okay, this is coming together. This is really fun. Pizza Titan Ultra was a bit weird because we knew we had a hilarious premise. Like we laughed a lot with, oh, it's a giant robot that delivers pizza. But what that game actually is took a very long time to figure out. It was a lot of exploring mechanics and tuning things. And we just did so many iterations of basic player speed and turning. And what are the resources? Like, are you running out of time? Are you running out of energy? There were just like iterations of almost every system in the game that just kept coming in these waves. And it took a long time till it sort of came together in a way that's like, okay, cool. You're running. You have to race the clock. You're being fast. But also, you know, like you stop and fight enemies, and it's worth fighting enemies, but not so much so that you want to ignore your deliveries. Like we're trying to balance all these things.
Yeah. I still love the fact that your insanity is funded by your government.
Yep. Yeah. That's, I'm very pleased they do that as well.
Our government's run by insanity, but not funded by it.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Oh man, we are the laughing stock of the world now.
we have our moments, but not to get dive into that rabbit hole.
Oh god, yeah, that would be a deep one. So, what kind of mechanics? Oh, go ahead, you ask. I've been asking a lot.
Yes, you have. Shut up, Joe.
I'm back here.
I'm timeout. You mentioned that you wanted to focus on a single player experience. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because Starwall had been co-op, but a lot of people are asking for co-op for this game. What is your response to that? Do you think that co-op would be in the future, or are you just like, nope, it's single, deal with it?
Yeah, more the latter. I mean, honestly, I would have loved to do some sort of co-op. I also looked at more like asymmetrical co-op, like where you have things like Mario Galaxy, you know, where someone gets to be, I don't know, the pizza maker or the navigator or the gunner or something on the mech, but they don't necessarily control the whole second mech. Yeah. We also talked about, you know, like almost taking turns a little bit more, like some older classic games, if we couldn't get two mechs and render this city. So one of the crazy things about this game is a lot, not everyone appreciates this right away, but it's actually pretty resource intensive. Like it's a bit of a system hog. It was hard to optimize. It was hard to get it running on all the consoles, because there's this whole huge city and it's all destructible. So there's all, like, so many interactive elements in a scene. So there are technical considerations too that would make it kind of hard to be rendering two of those scenes and actually have that running. So you're right. It has been one of the more requested things, and I would love to have done some sort of co-op, but we had to draw the line somewhere for the scope. I mean, co-op, I'm actually surprised not that many people have asked about bosses, which feels like the kind of thing you would want it for me in this sort of game. Like, it was just a bit longer. I mean, some people have said, you know, is it just this? Is it the same thing? And there's mission objectives which modify it, but its core loop is pretty simple, and maybe bosses would be the thing that would break it up for the people who find it gets a bit repetitive. But yeah, no, I don't think we'll be adding co-op in the near future, at least, unless I have to really take off for some sort of major update like that.
I would have liked to see the kind of co-op of like having a gunner helping you out as you're trying to run around and take care of everything, because shit gets hectic after a while in that game.
Yes. Yeah, I think certainly a couple of people on the team, and I'm one of them, just really feel the game is at its best in what's usually the final moments of your run. You know, where it's by design, if you stay in there for a really long time, you start to get to just insane waves of enemies. And even the earlier missions will introduce what are technically sort of within our own kind of like design, late game enemies. So like in the very first mission, if you hang in there long enough, you will just start to get like batshit crazy enemies coming at you, giant other mechs, and things are dropping like artillery barrages and tractor beams and flamethrowers just in that sort of suburban level that literally starts with no enemies. So they're all designed to just kind of escalate and escalate and escalate. And for me, that's the best part, is especially the later missions, because they get there a bit faster. But when you get a few minutes in and you're racing through and you kind of know the city well, but then it just starts to throw like huge armies up against you. And yeah, I love the madness that it almost becomes like kind of bullet hell, just, you know, fighting through just huge armies. That's my favorite.
Does anybody think it gets too hectic? Because they're like, I've been trying like hell to get the gold pizza slice on the opening level, and I can't do it. I got within like $100 of the goal, and I keep falling short because I either run out of time or I get my ass handed to me.
Okay. I mean, yeah, we tried to tune it so that you do a few, you know, most people do a few runs. Once you start to learn the route, figure out where the, you know, there's the hidden collectibles in every level. If you find your five hidden ultra ingredients, you learn where the time, I would definitely say time pickups are, yeah, I'd prioritize those over just cash. I do see a lot of rookie players, are just so focused on collecting all the cash that they're even like missing time pickups. It's like, no, you want to keep as much time on the clock as you can. And then the other thing is actually engaging the enemies does really, for the highest scores, you do want to learn how to maximize your kind of your move set. Cause it's a game where in the early stages and sort of like in the middle of most levels, I do see people who can just, or just sort of mashing whatever, surviving and winning combat. But when you start to really figure out like, oh, okay, I see what I'm going to do here. Like run in, stomp, kill everyone on the ground, jump up, helicopter, spin that guy out of the air, like do a drop kick down on this last guy. And you just can wipe out everything in front of you super, super fast. Then there's this sort of almost a bit of a slot machine on top, because the drops are semi-randomized. So if you can kill things really fast, get good drops, you'll get a bit of extra time. You'll maybe get your boost back. And if all else fails, the fourth unlockable power, the gravity drive, is what a lot of our most veteran kind of testers always said was the best. Funnily enough, I know for a fact you can gold every single challenge with just the default super sprint, because that's still what I use. So I've set like super high scores, with super sprint, because I just found it the most fun, everywhere in the game. But yeah, it's just sort of figuring out those levels, knowing the routes, and a lot of it's taking out enemies fast and prioritizing how you collect time.
What does that gravity ability do? Because I did not get to unlock that yet.
Okay, so the gravity drive is basically a coin magnet, and we sort of rebalanced it after our initial launch. So it actually slows you down a bit to use it, but as long as you're holding the left trigger, you're kind of slowed down, but it just sucks in all the collectibles, like all the, not the ultra ingredients, but all the coins, health, and time. So you can really clear out a lot of the, like, in that Burbs mission, for instance, where you have to do a lot of, you kind of have to get better at, like, platforming to get all the time pickups up on the rooftops on that first mission. Mm-hmm. But not so much if you unlock the gravity drive. And all the unlocks are driven by some people had sort of missed this, but it's you buy costume parts, and every so many costume parts, we like give you a new ability. So that's how you get
that. I noticed that. Okay. I unlocked one.
Right.
Do the costume parts do anything, or are they all just cosmetic?
Nope. They're just, we want you to, we deliberately wanted to just be like, you build the mech that you think looks the most awesome and ridiculous, or whatever criteria you're using. Do that, and then we'll give you these powers separately, and you can equip those. I appreciate there have definitely been some people who wanted subtle stat boosts here and there. But we wanted it to just sort of be cosmetic, and ultimately we didn't really want a lot of fussy stat boosts either, because that on some level can kind of ruin the sense that you could get gold in the early game. Like I don't always like when games are like, well, now you're just 20% faster all the time because you've equipped certain things. So like the powers are kind of modifiers. And like I said, a lot of people would say the gravity drive is the most powerful, but again, super sprint, with just the mech as it is, can get gold everywhere.
How did you set the gold times? Like, is there somebody that specifically job is just to sit and get gold time?
Well, it's based on sort of a halfway between point of what I, so, interestingly, we have the resources for a lot of testing. So I really relied on watching streamers. We did send out a lot of beta keys, and a lot of people put out content before our launch. And even after launch, we did some balancing. And I had a few sort of rules. Obviously, I had to be able to get gold. And they were initially tuned sort of towards like kind of higher scores I had. Then we were like kind of tuned it way down. And what was an instant make this harder for me was anytime I would watch someone get gold on their first try. Like to me, basically no one on earth, like you should, maybe there's some just like freakishly good players out there who could do this, but almost no one should be playing a mission and just like, oh, I got the gold, because that's not very satisfying either. Like you want something for players to do. So you just want the gold star. Give me my gold. Free and easy. Yeah, that's fair.
I'm not gonna lie, the first thing I looked for was a difficulty setting, and there wasn't one, and I was like, right. Shit.
What we did is, because I'm very concerned and particular about difficulty, and I did a lot of this balancing, and for me it was really important that most people don't get like super blocked on the story missions. Like if you're there and you just find the characters hilarious, because we have all these characters and all this dialogue, and I just want people to have fun and enjoy that, and maybe even tune some missions down so you'd have like time in the mission. Like if it's so insane you could never ever hope to read the goofy dialogue happening during the mission. So I kept kind of turning down the difficulty of especially some of the later levels of the campaign, and there's still some harder ones, but that's where you can take the shield or the super laser, and the right spot will usually get you through those if you have those unlocked. But I wanted sort of a critical path through the game where you can just experience the story, and that not too many people would get hung up on the difficulty. Like you should never, I don't want people having to play a mission more than, for me, if I saw people really getting stuck more than two or three tries, I would usually go and like be finding ways to make it easier, either more time or more health pickups, or just time on the clock, or adjusting. Every level has slight modifiers even to like how much time and money you get per delivery. It's scaled by distance within a level, but even there's a multiplier on that. So we really fine-tuned a lot of that stuff. But for the challenge, for those gold medals, I'm sorry to say that I kind of wanted it to be hard. Well, the whole team, like we talked about this, we went back and forth, but we wanted a challenge there, like something classic arcadey, just kind of tough for players to kind of reach for. If you like the game and you're a challenge-driven player, there's these 8 missions where it's really throwing the gauntlet down for you. Can you
beat
that?
So you want people to earn that shit.
Yeah, that's where we went a little bit more old school, the fire and brimstone mentality with difficulty. So it really has like the two things going on in the game, and I think they sort of appeal to slightly different. There's obviously overlap, but slightly different player personalities. When we also pay a lot of attention and brought various versions of the game to different conventions, most of the time resulting in conflux. But not always, as we've mentioned before the show, I think. We looked a lot at, what are people enjoying? And we saw that there are people who didn't really want the challenge, but just got interested in the world and the story and the characters. And what is this ridiculous pizzeria, and who is inside this restaurant, and why are they doing all this? and the mystery of how did Cheeseborg even come to be. So we wanted those players to just, you know, a slightly more frictionless experience through the game. But then there were some players who would be like, well, that was too easy. Like, who, when we did have easier gold, would just like blast through it. And you could tell, like, they were less interested in buying the game because they didn't feel it held challenge for them. So that's kind of the two streams, the two player types that we had in mind when we were balancing all that.
For all my begging for an easy mode, I actually didn't find the game too difficult, and I got really close to the gold pizzas my first couple attempts. So, and I struggle. I'm old and arthritic, and I'm like, I can't do this shit. But no, I was doing okay.
Right. Good. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think we hit, like honestly, I spent a lot of time tuning this stuff and looking at players and talking to players, and I think for the most part we landed in a pretty good place with that, because I do think it's one of the subtle things. It's funny, someone actually came to me at PAX West and said, you know, it's really interesting, I noticed when that level started, you had, I think it was something like 57 seconds on the clock. And I always find it interesting when I see something like that in a game, because this is someone talking to me who I forget what their role in the industry was, but they were just saying, you could tell that's not a number, like, you know, people like nice round numbers and that's what they'll put in by default. But when you land on something like 57 seconds, that's because someone play tested it and was like, oh, a minute is too high. And, you know, 50 seconds is too low, and 55 is still too low. And that was our process, like very, very, like, let's just keep trying things and, oh, just a little nudge up, a little nudge down. And it was interesting. Someone kind of picked up on that just from some of the little cues in there. But that's for me, the polish phase where a lot of games will go kind of next level on quality is doing that extra bit of playtesting and just seeing how everything really runs, how players interact with the game.
Nice. Did you ever consider doing like multiple difficulty settings or even like a pacifist mode for people who just basically wanted to treat it like Crazy Taxi with a giant mech?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we did probably talk about a few of those options. We did talk about different difficulties. I don't know if we ever had like a totally passive mode. There was, you know, there maybe is unrealized potential there to have like a much lower time pressure. Within the campaign, there are missions in almost every zone of the city that do have much more time on the clock, so you could just wander off and explore. But that was something that did come up a few times, and we tried to address it, and I don't know if we went all the way, but was just, is there a mission somewhere where you can just wander, just explore and find collectibles and check out the city? But because of the nature of the game, it was hard. And I'm not always all about games that have crazy sort of race the clock time pressure. But we really tried to just find a balance and make one difficulty that was good. So we didn't, like, the other thing is it just becomes a scope that can be unmanageable for a small core team. You know, if you're now doing like easy, medium, and hard, means like as you tune everything and as you do all your playtesting, like, are those things actually harder or easier? Because you do see games where, you know, they totally miss the mark on what's easy and hard in a mission. Like, you hit some impossible mission because they're having you do some like weird platforming thing, and they're having you like they're like, oh, would you like to lower, you know, give yourself more health or lower the enemy damage in this level? It's like, no, it's about the platforming. Yeah, I'm talking about God of War, whichever one that was. you know, but like, you see, like, even good games, like big games for bigger studios can get this stuff wrong. Like, if you have a broad difficulty modifier of some kind, it doesn't always even address what the difficulty is. So I'm a fan of where you can keeping things pretty much one difficulty. My favorite approach is old LucasArts games, where they had like sort of primary mission objectives, then secondary and tertiary mission objectives. And that's what we were kind of trying to do with like the cash scores on top and the challenge mode, where there's the primary objectives are pretty clear. And then you just layer stuff on top. That's personally my favorite way of approaching difficulty. So it's not like you're choosing a difficulty that makes it harder or easier to progress. Progression is more or less something that you'll be able to do in a few attempts. But then for players who are paying attention or looking for achievements or whatever it is, there's a real layer of finesse on top.
Achievements are the magic word on this show.
Okay. Yeah.
I know people are crazy about achievements, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People definitely. And we actually, this is a nice thing for me to bring up, is we shipped with PS4 having some achievement problems. And I gotta say, I'm shocked how nice people were about it. Cause we got a bunch of emails And if ever there was a time for people to be kind of surly with us...
You sons of bitches!
Yeah, well, really, but no, because one of them was the earn $500,000 total playing our game, right? Like, this is a long, long haul. Like, you've just been chipping away at this. Like, you really played a lot of Pizza Titan Ultra to get that final one, and they're trying, and people are trying to get their platinum trophy for it, and it was broken.
Already? The game's been out, like, how long?
Well, it's not the longest game ever. Yeah, it's... Well, the Xbox One version has not been out long, but PS4 was released last month, was it?
All right.
So yeah, people had enough time to attempt this. And yeah, we did have a few people complaining, but they were so nice. They're like, oh, I really love your game. You know, I'm having a great time with it. I just thought you should know, you know, I've been trying to platinum it for a while. you could be more aggressive about this. But no, I appreciate the people were kind. We are a small team and we fixed it. It's patched. So the
be Xbox One version should have known. Be glad that was PlayStation and they don't take trophy hunting near as hardcore as we do achievement hunting on Xbox.
Yeah, overall, I definitely see that.
Like, you'd be sitting in a closet crying by the time Xbox achievement
you sons of bitches!
Yeah. So hopefully everything's good now. No. It
should be fine. The nervous laughter sold it for me. So you mentioned that you showed this off at conventions. Mm-hmm. Are there any really good stories of people who were like exceptionally good at the game or people who were just abysmally awful at the game? Anything fun stories?
I mean, you always get a few of those. There's this one guy, I think he was in Ottawa even, but he worked at Ubisoft was the story I got. I didn't even see this guy play. I just saw that we actually had like a whiteboard. We were sort of doing like an informal, like tracking high scores. And he just came and apparently he picked it up and he played like the first time he ever played, he like got like triple the next highest score for the whole weekend. And he just sort of afterwards put the controller down. I was like, good game, and walked away. Like, just destroy it. Like, just boom. And that was when I first realized like, oh, the spectrum of skill levels that could be coming to this game are, you know, it's quite wide. So yeah, I'm trying to think if there were any other ones, No, it's just we love just interacting with people, seeing people play the game, and impressions have generally been really good. Like the show floor has been really good to us. It was different demoing this from Starwall, because Starwall is just so immediate, and just you get the crowd and you get everyone playing against their friends, and like it's the best thing to bring to a show. But I think even though Pizza Titan Ultra is a single player experience, it still showed really, really well. We had a lot of fun showing it off. I'm at a loss for like crazy stories about people, but it was good. It's good. Always fun to bring it out.
Well, how about some crazy Starwall stories? Cause I can only imagine the kind of craziness that happened there. I had some local parties with my wife. I mentioned on the show that Starwall was one of the first games that made her actually pick up and play a game in years. And she was just having a blast with it, cursing me out when I would hit her, laughing in my face when she would get me. It was just an absolute blast playing with friends.
Yeah, well, I mean, I love, and that's one of the reasons I love Starwall for sure, is Starwall has this great curve of, you know, you are a flaccid lump on the ground to like, oh my God, I can kind of fly. Like, you know, like just over, you know, varies from person to person, but like 5-10 minutes, you kind of go from like, this game controls terribly to being like soaring across a level. So it's got that interesting, and the controls are so different that you get groups of friends where it's already established who's the best at, you know, Smash Brothers or whatever game they like, but because it's almost its own new genre and the controls are these weird character relative, it's kind of an even playing field. So you get people who the real underdogs of the group, and to stereotype horrifically, but this is what we saw at shows, it would be like, you know, all these bros and one of their girlfriends is like, I want to try this one, and just destroys them all. And you know, that's fun. It's fun to offer that, and some people walk away being like, oh, it's, you know, this game isn't fair, but people do figure it out most of the time. We did see recently, I'm pretty sure at PAX West, they brought it back this year again, which is super fun, into the Omegathon, their giant contest of games. And we actually got out to watch it. And it is so satisfying to, you know, we were already having like a great weekend because people were playing Pizza Titan Ultra and loving it. That was a lot of fun. But then we go out and there's this room with, I don't know, like 100 people, like maybe more people than that, watching people on a stage playing our game and just losing their minds. Like people are cheering and screaming and like, you know, like just showing a lot of support, a lot of love or hate for the people duking it out in your game up on a giant screen. And that is just so much fun. But I will say, hilariously, I'm pretty sure one of the contestants, and they know in advance what the games are, I'm pretty sure someone didn't figure out in a whole, like, several rounds they played, didn't figure out how to make the star wall go. we're just sort of watching yellow, and they're just doing all these cartwheels and flipping, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure they haven't hit, like, A to move forward ever. And every now and then... it would hit like the taunt button, which, you know, does the weird like chirpy sound. And I'm just like, yeah, they're just not they're not getting it. They don't know how to just go forward. And once we figured that out, we were just kind of laughing that like this was like the contest of skill with Starwall. But maybe my favorite story, just talking about crazy Starwall stories. One of my favorites was, I wasn't at Breakfall full time for most of the development here. And my relatively new boss at a mobile game company, I sat down and I'm like, so this is my other game I made with some friends. And we played for like a minute and a half. And he's just like, I'm not sure I'm comfortable playing this with you right now. We're just sort of rolling uncomfortably all over each other in the game. And we just played a round or two and then just sort of quietly parted ways.
This makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, this makes me uncomfortable.
The best part of Starwall stories is how many times you said flaccid, and it's not been my fault, and we haven't segued with speaking of dicks yet.
Yep. Which is a common segue on this
it
show.
It is. We okay. use it like we don't sure. know, we don't oh, know yeah. anything else to say. That's what we go with. Right. And so I'm just waiting for it. But here we are. It's been like, I don't know how many minutes anymore. And I'm like, well, I'm you're, just going to say, strange. Speaking of dicks.
Excellent. Yeah, good.
Speaking of dicks, I would love to see you guys at MAGFest one of these years.
Well, let's... What is MAGFest?
MAGFest is the Music and Gaming Festival held in the D.C. area. It's in January.
Okay, all right. I knew the name, but yeah, right. January. Well, we'll see. We are sort of watching our spending on travel, but I won't say no for sure. Might be fun to come out to that.
Yeah,
they have to budget in a flu shot before you go.
Yeah, except that now I'm going to get super sick because we talked about that. And, yeah.
It's Joe's fault.
Yeah, boy. But then Joe, you can get me sick too.
Well, there we go. Just lick the controller and hand it over.
I mean, I can't believe anybody hasn't done that yet.
We intermittently sanitize the controllers just because of all that grossness. But yeah,
just hose them down with Purell.
We have like Lysol wipes and just give it a little cleaning as a courtesy to everyone and our. I mean, we pick up the controllers too, right? So yeah.
Yeah, when I go to MAGFest to their indie thing, everyone's like, hey, do you want to try this game? And I'm like, I just saw the person who played before me, and no, I'll just watch. I'm good. Yeah. I'd rather talk to you about the game than play the game and then get some kind of evil virus that's going to take out half the country.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you don't want to pick up the controller after Patient Zero just had to go.
That would be me.
One of us, at least.
I am always, like, well... I'm on immune suppressant treatment, so that's why I'm just like, I'm sick with everything all the time. That's why Joe gives me hell. It's fine.
At least you have a reason. I mean, I'm just sick all the time because
cons.
Maybe, yeah, cons, or even when I'm not going to cons, I don't know what's wrong with me.
Kids.
I have a lot of allergies, and the kids haven't helped. I've been like this for a long, long time. Could be that I stay up all night all the time and eat terribly, but I doubt that's it. I doubt that. I don't think it's lifestyle related.
Urban legend.
Yeah, for sure.
We legit keep hand sanitizer by the door, and the kids aren't allowed to hug me until they sanitize their hands when they come in.
That's a good policy.
And I still end up sick all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Hose the kids down with Purell.
Yeah, basically, I'm just like, can we hook the water hose up to the hand sanitizer pump and just like spray them before they step off the bus?
Yeah, really.
Like line up against the wall. You're all getting hosed down.
Like a clean room. Like everyone comes in like hazmat suits and the scrubber protocol.
I whine all the time that I'd love to go to a convention, but now that like we're talking about the germ aspect of it, I'm like, I'd be dead before I was there for an hour.
I do actually think the reason I dodged anything this time, though, is I was pretty diligent about, we just did hide a giant pump bottle of Purell behind our TV, and as soon as anyone I touched was out of sight, I would go sanitize my hands.
You just gargle it.
Yeah. Disgusting. Then you get a little buzz from the small amount of alcohol, and you're just better. You're just more equipped to deal with people at a convention. It's great.
The real solution was gonna be a good show.
Slip a little more alcohol into the Purell.
Yeah, that's right. It's half Purell, half rum this time around.
Does anybody smell whiskey? No, that's just the hand sanitizer. It's fine.
It's a vodka Purell tonic.
I'd be down for that.
Just making mojitos at their booth. How fast you're getting shut down there.
Yeah. No, I swear it's just Purell. I swear. Look, I'm going to clean my hands with it. It's so delicious.
You're going to be like a cat licking the back of your hand.
You're covered in sugar and muddled mint. What's wrong with you?
I mean, that sounds like a typical Saturday to me.
It also sounds like something that the enforcers would definitely have a chat with you about if you're running a booth, though.
They have enforcers at cons?
And well, that's what they call their volunteers at PAX, is the enforcers, sort of jokingly. But I wonder what happens when you really get on their bad side.
You just give them some whiskey and it's fine.
You just give them a bottle of Purell. Yeah. What am I supposed to do with this? Oh, you drink it.
I'm not going to drink Purell. Listen, man, you're going to want to drink this Purell. I hope you like coconut.
Yeah.
That's the convention equivalent to jailhouse wine.
Just imagining, you know, I didn't get sick at this con. I'm blind now, but good con.
Oh my lord. Oh, so what else is there to talk about? Pizza Titan Ultra.
Oh yeah, that's a thing.
No, I'm trying to think how do we segue from
speaking of dicks.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Cheeseborg, our villain, is really a dick, but yeah, no, it's weak.
It was still better than most of what we come up with, so you're good, keep going. There we go.
I do actually, I quite enjoy, because people do, they wonder, they want to know in this game, like, okay, so you're a pizzeria, yeah. So why are things shooting at you? Is this like the government's trying to stop you? Like, no, the government loves you, people love you, everyone loves you in this game. This is a rival pizzeria, and then people want to know more about like why do they have evil robots? But I love when I get to describe our villain as somewhere, so you know, sort of Chuck E. Cheese meets the Terminator. And a lot of people seem to appreciate that description. And that's literally what I asked the artist to do, and he came back with a pretty wonderful portrait. Yeah.
Oh, my
I
don't know Lord.
What else is there to talk about. I think everyone listening should go buy Pizza Titan Ultra.
Well, where can people get it? How much is it?
So it's now $11.99 US dollars on Steam and Xbox One. So you can go get it in either of those places. And it's a little pricier on PS4. We have to lower the price there, because we initially got some feedback that the price was too high. It was initially a little more than that. But yeah, it should be eventually about $12. Everywhere. And yeah, it's not like the longest game, so that's why it's a little bit lower in price, but it's a good time and you should check it out.
Are there any Switch plans for the game?
There are Switch plans. I'm trying to think of what I can say. I think the official line we're still operating under is we are investigating bringing it to the Switch.
We hear that line a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Non-committal answers are the best.
Very non-committal. No, it'll be on Switch eventually. I can't give you a date right now, but yeah, it'll... I have... Am I even allowed to say that? It sure would be fun to play on Switch in portable, and if we had a dev kit and I took it away for a weekend and played the whole game on it and had a good time, that's what I would say.
Is Starwall on the Switch?
Starwall is not on the Switch.
What the hell are you waiting for? That seems like such a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. We actually pitched it to Nintendo, and we thought their answer was a little strange. At the time, it was earlier on, and they seemed really worried about just re-releasing old games, which is crazy because there's so much of that. There had already been a bunch of that, and then there was a ton more, and we're like, how do we like fall between the, like, and a lot of our sort of cohort of like local multiplayer games are now also like coming to Switch if they aren't already, like, you know, like there's the Towerfall was announced, Samurai Gun, like this was sort of like, we were sort of part of that wave of the local competitive multiplayer games. So they initially sort of declined. They weren't that interested. They were, the way it was put to us is they were more interested in new things. So that's why we focused on Pizza Titan Ultra, sort of to get that out there. But if you keep looking for Starwall on Switch, perhaps someday that will appear as well. It's something we definitely still like to do.
Yeah, that seems like the perfect platform for the game.
Yeah, I agreed. Yeah, there's a lot about Starwall that just worked that, you know, I want to credit us with just being amazing game designers, but through whatever combination of just dumb luck and skill, it reads really well. So it's even the kind of thing that you could play, say, with four Joy-Cons on the tiny screen with a few people crowded around it, because it's just visually, it's not super confusing. It goes into slow-mo on near hits. It would work really well on that platform. So yeah, we're aware of that. On it.
Good to hear. Very good to hear.
Yeah.
Oh man. So I know we've been chatting for a while. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
No, I think we covered most of it. This was fun. People ask me this, and I always feel like I should have a better answer. Yeah, we didn't talk about this thing, but no, we covered a lot of. I got to ramble about Pizza Titan Ultra and game design and other fun development stuff. So I'm good.
Well, where can people keep up to date with you? Keep up to date with Breakfall. Everything that you guys are doing.
Yeah, so definitely I'm spending more and more time on Twitter, which I used to think was just going to end the world, but since I took over the Breakfall Twitter, it's largely me running it. I'm having a great time. This is like a long-standing thing where Jason's like, I love Twitter, it's the best. And I'm like, Jason, Twitter is just the apocalypse on the internet. And then I realized we were in very different places on Twitter, and I was getting constant, like, I followed a bunch of political stuff and then science, which is now a political issue, and just everything was just people, angry people yelling at each other on the internet. Then I look over and Jason is all in the development community and talking to other developers, where it's like this wonderful, supportive, nurturing community. And so when I took over the Breakfall thing, and as it turns out, similarly happy, nice people are the people you're reaching out to be like, hey, would you like a free copy of our game? Like, people are really nice in that situation. At Team Breakfall, we're sort of trying to be more active on that and do some of that social media and community stuff. And it's a lot of fun. So I will definitely try to reply to anyone who reaches out there.
And how about you personally? I know you're a musician, so you could plug your Bandcamp right now.
Right. Yeah, definitely mikeok.bandcamp.com is one of the places where you can listen to all the schfancy music for both of those games and others. What's my Twitter handle? I retweeted something before the show. I should know this. I still don't use my personal Twitter that much, but mikeok, I'm just trying to remember if it's what the actual handle is, but I'm terrible. I'm terrible at plugging myself. I don't know, man. MikeOK.bandcamp.com is where the music is. That's the good stuff. So any game soundtrack I can sort of convince, especially this is something I do more and more with indies, is like I can be like, I just want the rights. You get to keep all the music, but I want the rights to just sort of stream it on this site. So fun little portfolio site for me. And every now and then I get a few downloads, few purchases. So makes me feel good. You can go over there and do that.
There you go. So go buy some music. It's good shit.
Thanks. Yeah. Especially, actually, that's the one thing, I guess, that does come up with Pizza Titan Ultra is the theme song.
That's a fucked up theme song.
Thank you.
I love the lyrics that are included on the title screen.
Yeah, and that's when it really took off for me, was the bouncing ball sing-along. So we've had a few people be like, yeah, you know, the sing-along at the start justifies the entire cost of the game. People get really into it. But that's my first ever theme song, and I was almost thrown out of university for how badly I sing. So with enough with enough auto-tune and editing, you too can be a video game theme song pop star.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, that's up there on Bandcamp with everything else. So,
oh, sounds good. Cole, did you have any final questions?
No, I'm good. I'm good. Well, I think we covered everything I had wrote down.
Are you double-checking? Check your list.
Yeah.
Checking it twice.
Yep.
Gonna but find I'm out good. Who's naughty and nice.
We are A-okay. I'm going to have cough drop number 7 now.
Oh, my God.
I'm struggling.
Good thing we only have another hour plus of the show to go.
I'm going to have to hit the inhaler, too. I'm not doing
it. I believe in you guys. Good luck. Soldier on through.
He's like, bitch, I'm gone.
He's like, I'm done dealing with these dipshits. Mike, it has been incredible having you on the show. I haven't laughed this hard in quite a while. Please come back sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to. So this was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Well, anytime that you want to come back on, let us know. We would love to have you back. But for now, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
No, you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
Nobody ever has final words, but Joe does it to us all the time.
I'll be more prepared next time. Yeah, don't do drugs and stay in school.
Aw, the drugs are fun.
Yeah, I only believe half-heartedly in some of that. But, you know, I have kids now, so we have to say certain things, right?
Yeah, you got to put on that facade.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, man. All right. Well, you have yourself a wonderful night, and we will talk to you again sometime soon.
Right on. Thanks again.
Take care.
Cheers.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Indeed.
Oh, man, that was really fantastic. I haven't laughed that hard in quite a while.
That was a good one.
I love when shows go off the rails. But we do have a lot more show to take care of. Like, there was, oh, my God, so much news this past week.
Really?
Yes.
Goddamn. Okay, let's go.
I mean, the big news right off the top, Telltale Games shutting down. We just missed this one last week's show. It happened on Friday. Originally, people thought it was a full closure, but it turns out that they are hitting with massive layoffs, that they cut their staff down from 250 down to 25, so a 90% reduction. It was reported that the 25 that are remaining are going to be working on, Minecraft story mode for Netflix, I think.
Yeah.
But
originally they were saying everything was canceled. First it was everything's canceled except for the final season of The Walking Dead. And it was like, no, that's fucked too. It's just Minecraft for Netflix now.
Yeah. Wolf Among Us season 2 is gone. Stranger Things is gone. Walking Dead final season is still up in the air. It is officially, from what they say, canceled, but they are in talks with other studios to possibly come in and help finish, wrap up the series. Later on in the show, you're going to hear a review with Tim Ekibis that I did with him, and he had a good point of, like, they already had people. So if they wanted to finish it, why the fuck did they fire everyone?
Right. It's a very weird thing that happened, and it was so out of the blue. And then apparently some of the accounts from employees were like, oh yeah, they come up to us and told us we had like 30 minutes to get the fuck out.
And apparently there were reports that they were still hiring people as late as last week or the week before.
That there was somebody who had like flown across the country to take a job. So it's just all seems so random and just up in the air. We hear of, you know, studios shutting their doors all the time, but I don't think we've ever had one be this abrupt and poorly handled.
Yeah.
It was certainly like they are making a conscious effort to rival the culling deaths at this point with pissing people off, because there's people, you know, screaming, these employees didn't get severance pay and they didn't have enough warning. And apparently the employees have filed a lawsuit now, which just seems really weird to me. You're not going to get money from a studio that closed because it was fucked. So, but it's just, there's so much going on. that it's hard to make any sense out of any of it.
It was an absolute shit show of new, mm-hmm. because the details were changing hourly at some points.
They still kind of are. Like, I don't think anybody really knows the legit story of what the fuck's going on here.
Yeah, like, Netflix is saying that they're still going to be doing a Stranger Things game. I know Devolver Digital's talking that they want to get involved with Stranger Things. No one knows what's going on with Walking Dead. The voice actors are like, we really wish you could see this through to the end, but probably won't. did episode 2 release?
They did release episode 2 on Tuesday. And so far, that's that. There's nothing else coming. I don't know that there's even going to be refunds for people who bought the season.
Well, there fucking better be, because I bought the season.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm fucking glad I didn't. But
no one knows what's going on with titles that they publish. Like, Stranded Deep is supposed to be coming out in the coming weeks, and
they don't even
know what's going on with it. They don't know. No one knows. Apparently, Sony removed the ability to pre-order the game. People are telling each other with the Xbox version, like, just don't bother pre-ordering it now.
Yeah.
Wait to see if this thing actually happens. But it is a shit show.
That's hurtful too. That's a two-man studio out of Australia. I mean, that's harmful for a studio like that to be caught up in, you know, in the whole, hey, just don't pre-order, don't buy this game because the publisher shit the bed.
Yeah. Like, that's the livelihood of two people who I'm sure worked their asses off on this game.
Right. That
they don't know if it'll ever even release. Who knows what's going to happen with it?
Because then that, if they've signed an agreement, like publishing, to some extent, Telltale's going to hold some kind of rights.
Yeah.
So now that Telltale's tits up, what happens to their part of the rights? Are these people even going to ever be able to release this game?
And then, like, the week before last, didn't they just release a racing game as well? Telltale Publishing put out, what was it, RGX or something?
Possibly. I wouldn't be surprised. But I'd have not. Look, I'm not going to lie to you. 7 Days to Die was such a disappointment that as soon as I saw Telltale Publishing on something, I was just like, meh. I'm not going to lie. I'm sorry. Hey. Maybe that's why they went tits up. But, but it was all in my hands.
Yeah, but we'll hear more about Telltale later on in the show when Tim comes on to do his review. I'm breaking continuity and oh my God.
Whoops.
It's like I record things out of order sometimes.
Never. Tim's just in your pocket, that's all. He's just waiting for his turn.
He's waiting there for you to, like, take cough drop 47 and just drop out for 20 minutes and then he comes in to talk.
Yep, we're getting there.
And the crazy thing is, there's still more huge news because Hell has officially frozen over. Sony is running an open beta to allow crossplay on Fortnite between all platforms.
But what about the kids?
PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, PC, mobile, all playing together. So far, it's only on Fortnite. Hoping that this works out and Sony gets their head completely out of their asshole and we get crossplay on all games, but this is a positive first step.
Yeah. We have to say something nice about Sony.
Yeah.
I mean, because they did at least make the step, finally.
Yeah.
But they will find some way to fuck it.
It's not all good news for Sony, though, because there's some bad news on the way. A bunch of their games are getting servers turned off. On October 25th, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale on PS3 and Vita is getting shut down. Warhawk on the PS3 is getting shut down. Twisted Metal on the PS3 is getting shut down. And Drawn to Death on the PS4 is also losing its online features. So a lot of PlayStation games getting server shutoffs, which is a bummer.
Yeah. It's kind of that time, though, for PS3. And, like, the only thing keeping Xbox 360 games running is backward compatibility.
Yeah.
And if Sony isn't going to embrace that, then they just run the risk of losing the servers for that shit because it's just not going to have the player base to justify it.
No. Speaking of backward compatibility, thanks for giving me a good segue.
I am the best segue ever.
Two more games were added to the backward compatibility lineup this week with Call of Juarez, The Cartel, and Call of Juarez, Bound in Blood. So I believe the whole 360 Call of Juarez series is playable on Xbox One now.
That's pretty nice. It's impressive how many full series are available backward compatibility right now.
It is, especially when you look at something like Assassin's Creed, where the entire goddamn thing is playable on Xbox One.
I think every Call of Duty is as well. That's been possible. On console, I think, from Call of Duty 2 up to... So, yeah. What was the last one that came out on 360? Advanced Warfare?
I don't remember.
I think so.
You're asking the wrong guy there.
I remember Advanced Warfare was the point where we made the leap from 360 to 1, so I'm pretty sure that may have been the last one.
Yeah. A lot of good stuff, though. Someone was complaining on Reddit a couple of days ago. They're like, oh, the backward compatibility lineup is just so tiny. It's such a small selection of games. I'm like, motherfucker, there's over 500 games playable.
Right.
How is that a small lineup?
It's a small lineup if you don't own any of them because you only buy two games a year, which True. Seems to be the case. Like, I find the people who complain about the lineup for backward compatibility to be the kind of people who only buy one or two games, maybe three tops. And then they go, well, but there's only like five games in my backward compatibility. Yeah, but you only had like seven games the whole time you had your fucking 360.
Expand your horizons. Look at the list, yeah. What's available, and play some of them. Pick something new up. Try a new game.
I wouldn't be mad if people tried new old games. That's one of the really cool things about the backward compatibility thing is that my kids get to try shit that I just never would have bought. So when it comes out games with gold, like, I never bought any of the Lego games. I didn't ever think they were a thing the kids would get into. And then we got them from Games with Gold, and they were backward compatible. And then they sit in there on the weekend, and they play the damn Lego games. And then I have to listen to Lego games, and all of them talk about Lego this and Lego that. And I'm like, I don't understand anything you're saying. When you going to learn to play a good game like PUBG? I don't know.
What's wrong with Lego? Are you shitting on Lego?
No, I'm just being like one of those out-of-touch parents.
I will cut you if you shit on Lego games. I love the Lego games.
I think I played maybe two, and it was the newer ones. But they were not bad. They were just not my kind of...
The older ones are like all super easy 1000s, too.
Really?
Yeah.
That explains why I've got so many achievements in them.
Yeah, they get time-consuming because there's a lot of replaying, but they're...
Yeah.
Fairly easy. Some of the newer ones have more difficult stuff in there because now they have like races and shit in there, and the handling on the races is kind of shitty, but
yeah,
you know, they're getting bigger and bigger and collectibles and everything else. So, you know, the newer ones aren't as easy as they were, but some of those old ones, like for a while, the only platinums I used to have on PlayStation were some Vita Lego games.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, there's still more big news from the week.
More
Games with Gold and PlayStation Plus were both announced for October. We'll start off with Games with Gold on Xbox One through the entire month of October. Overcooked, the original.
Yay!
Yay!
More people need this game. I think if more people play the first, then more people will jump on the second.
I hope so.
That's my theory, and if anybody wants to prove me wrong, then fuck you, I'm not listening.
We still need to play more Overcooked 2 online.
We do, because it's so good.
With Jacob throwing rice everywhere.
There's a new update for Overcooked 2 coming. And
is there?
It's going to add a fourth star. And even there's to break news during news, but there was an announcement trailer put out by Team 17 and the Overcooked devs, but it was just like a little short, like 5 or 6 second thing. And there was some kind of beachy scenery, and then there was a chef with a fire hose or the fire extinguisher on the beach, and then it said there'd be more details on October 2nd.
Hmm.
So I don't know what the fuck's happening, but that's a thing to look out for.
Next week we'll hear more, but to finish up Games with Gold, October 16th through November 15th, Victor Vran, which is another solid action RPG.
Indeed.
Seems
to be a popular genre for Games with Gold.
It is. Like, all of the Van Helsing games were part, or most of the Van Helsing games were part of it. Victor Vran's part of it. Good stuff, though.
Yeah.
Then on the 360, from the 1st through the 15th is Stuntman Ignition, which is pretty cool. And then October 16th through the 31st is Hitman Blood Money. So overall, solid lineup. Nothing world-breaking, but decent enough.
Right. I agree.
PlayStation Plus, I think they just slightly edge out Xbox. On PlayStation 3 is Master Reboot, which I have no clue what the fuck that game is. And then The Bridge, which is a solid puzzle game, which is also cross-buy with the PS4 and the Vita. So you're getting it on all the platforms there. The Vita has Rocket Birds 2 Evolution, which we covered a couple years back. Really solid action game. Cross-buy with the PS4. As well as 2064 Read-Only Memories, which is another solid adventure game. Also cross-buy with the PS4. And then the PS4 is getting Friday the 13th, the game, which fits with the Halloween theme, obviously. And Laser League, which is part of Games Pass.
Nice.
So solid lineup for everyone all around. So no matter what system you have, good stuff.
Yeah, I need to play more Friday the 13th. I did enjoy it, but I didn't have anybody to play it with.
Yeah.
So I was always with randoms, and then they'd be assholes because nobody wanted to explain to me how to fucking play the game.
Don't think I have that one. That might be one of the few games I don't actually own.
God damn it, Joe.
I mentioned Game Pass. New games for Game Pass were announced for October. Another solid lineup here with Wolfenstein The New Order, Metro 2033 Redux, Westerado Double Barrel, Shantae Half Genie Hero. Shantae!
That's exciting.
Lego Indiana Jones, so there's one for you to 1,000. And Split Second. Oh, yeah, and this little indie called Forza Horizon fucking 4, which I can't... We're recording this Thursday night, and Friday morning, I'm going up to Best Buy to pick up my Ultimate Edition of Forza 4, because despite having Game Pass, I need to have this game, like, immediately. It's going to kill me waiting until the morning to have to go up there and get it.
I have the jellies. I love Forza Horizon racing games. I don't like the motorsport ones because they're too, like, simulation heavy and it's out of my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But Horizon, that shit lets me just jump off cliffs and giggle about it. And I am down for that shit. So I am anticipating that. I have my Game Pass is paid up for a couple months because I won some codes. And I will be playing a whole lot of Forza Horizon. I'll be dragging Studio's happy ass along with me. And it will be good.
We will have to play together then. Because, oh my God, yes. I cannot wait for Horizon 4. That's like my game of the fall season that I've... Like, if I had to cancel every other pre-order or every other game coming out, I had to skip. I cannot pass up Forza Horizon 4. That is my shit. I need it.
The whole thing with the season, have you seen any of the, seen anybody streaming it yet or anything?
I played the demo of it. I'm trying to stay away from watching other people play it because it just causes jealousy in me.
Oh, but you're going to miss out because if you've been watching it on Mixer,
you get XP.
Sorry. You get influence. And so, like, when I start the game, I'm already going to have like 100,000+ just from watching people play it.
And I'm okay. I'll learn that shit legit. I don't mind.
Like, some people have had straight up farm streams going, and I haven't done any of that. I've just actually, like, watched people play it in the mornings. But, yeah, this is, you get 500 XP, or 500 influence, I'm sorry, every 5 minutes if you're watching. If you're streaming, you get 1,250 influence every 5 minutes. And there are some events where you get bonus influence based solely on how many people are watching you concurrently.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like, that, it's just absolutely obscene amounts of influence.
Well, I might be streaming on Mixer again soon, then.
We're going to lose our affiliate status.
No, because I'll still stream the show on Twitch. I'll just stream Forza on Mixer.
Okay, we lose our subs, that's on you.
Oh, well, whatever. But that's all the news I got. Anything on your end?
No.
Well, then here's the magic question for you. Do you want to do reviews tonight or tomorrow? I'll just ask you on the show because I don't care. I figure your voice is probably shot right now. Mine's getting there as well. We could always take a quick break, come back with more show. It's up to you.
Let's take a break and come back with more show.
All right. Then we're going to play some music. We will be back tomorrow with more show.
I'm sorry. I'm dying. So you know who to call.
support justice work right now. It's delicious. Off makes battle plans. Ace keeps things rolling. Zach is there for the fans.
Pizza Bob
makes that pizza so tasty. Family handles delivery. Pizza Titan, ultra fresh and tasty. Giant robot, 50-minute guarantee. Pizza Titan, ultra pizza for justice. Order right now. It's delicious.
Welcome back, everyone. It is a new day, and we are recharged and refreshed and ready to do reviews. How are you doing?
Now, you're being excessive, Joe.
I gotta be positive, right?
Yeah. We'll see how refreshed and recharged we are when my voice gives out halfway through.
It's a new day. We're both miserable. I'm not playing Forza right now, which makes my heart hurt.
Truth in advertising.
Oh,
I have
man.
Four more days, so you can just calm your tits for a minute, and you will be okay.
My titties cannot be calmed because I need my Forza right now. I need it.
Same.
I played about an hour. It hurt my soul because I put the disc in, and it started installing. It's like 47 gigs, something crazy like that, and I was told there was an update, so I'm waiting and waiting for the little update. Hey, this game needs an update. To window to pop up, and it just never did. So I'm like, oh, I guess they were wrong. There wasn't an update. It got to like 60% and it's ready to play. So I'm like, finally, I could at least do like the intro to it and get a little bit of time in the game while waiting for the rest of it to install. Go to start it. This game needs an update.
47 more gigs.
No, like 23. For real.
Okay, so it's not awful.
But still, like, then it wasn't ready to play anymore. It dropped from like 70% ready down to like 50. And oh, the pain in my heart. Because I thought I was ready to go. And no. Oh, it's so good, though. It is so, so good.
It looks gorgeous.
It is beautiful. Oh my God, it's so good.
Is that your official review?
My review is buy it. Carnage in chat with the orgasm face. Like, yes. fucking, oh my god, Forza, it is so good. It is so, so good. I am so early in the game. I've only played it for about an hour so far, and it's still mostly stuff that I played in the demo, but I'm just, I got to explore. I can't wait.
Find all the fast travel boards. That's always my first goal, is to find as many of them fucking fast travel boards as possible. That way it's not as expensive when I get lost and have to backtrack.
See, I feel bad because normally in those games, they sell like the treasure map for like $3 or something that shows all the boards on the map. And yeah. I usually buy those just because A, I like supporting them, and B, I just want to find everything and get it over and done with. And because some of those boards are in weird, out of nowhere places that you would never find just casually playing.
Or like tucked up between two buildings or...
like way out in the mountains somewhere that no one would ever look, and it's not there yet. Hmm. So I don't know if they're going to sell one, or if they're not going to sell one, or if it's just not up yet. Who knows?
I do not.
I don't know. But yeah, my official review of Forza is buy the goddamn game, because it is amazing so far, even though I'm only an hour into it, because it's that good.
Very nice.
Yes. Now we have real reviews to do.
Journalist integrity by only playing an hour of the game.
Yes. That's what well, we didn't get it for review anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I know, but I was just wanted to be a smartass before somebody else said it.
Now, if we got it for real review, that would be completely different, but...
indeed.
We're not that kind of show. We don't get cool shit like that. We get indie shit, which is awesome still... but it's not Forza.
It's true.
And Forza, in my heart, Forza is just on a whole new level. So no slight to any of the games we're going to be covering, because we have a couple of games to talk about. But, you know, Forza, it's Forza.
Forza is pretty hard to beat, just in general.
It's just, oh my God.
And this one is just absolutely incredible. And the way they went in and made this dynamic weather and seasons and all that, it's just...
so good. So, so good. All right. Anyway, we have real reviews to take care of. We should probably get to those. First game to talk about tonight is called Speed Brawl, developed by Double Stallion, published by Kongregate, released September 18th on Xbox, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $19.99. Speed Brawl is a 2D combat racer about moving fast and hitting hard. Maintain your momentum, build your combos, and unleash powerful special moves. Find your own fighting style and assemble the finest team of brawlers ever seen. Then do it all again, faster, faster, faster. Cole, tell us about Speed Brawl.
You kind of covered the basis of it. It really is just a 2D side-scrolling beat-em-up, but has a speedrun element added to it. So if you kind of took the 2D beat-em-up and speedrunning communities, and you just force-smashed them together and was like, let's see what we get, you'd get this game. And that's pretty much the long and short of it. You have a variety of different characters, you have an overview map, and you can choose different championships. When you take a character into a championship, they are released from a cage and are forced to run right. Ideally, you want to keep as much momentum as possible. You can dash, punch, kick, or whatever. But every so often, you will reach kind of like an arena-type area where rather than just running past it, you're locked into this screen until you eliminate all the enemies that spawn there. In the beginning... this is not a bad thing. You're locked in, you take out the enemies, you move on, and it's fine. Eventually, though, some of the later levels, they get so fucking chaotic, and there's just mashes of enemies to the point that you can't even really see what you're doing anymore. You're just kind of button mashing and hoping to get through them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of to be expected. Once you get all the enemies cleared, you can move on again. And eventually you'll finish the course. Each course has a gold time, a silver time, and a bronze time. Nothing is more infuriating than getting to the end and realizing that you were 2 seconds short of gold.
Oh, man.
And I did that on every fucking level.
Oh, man. That's like me getting so close to the gold time in Pizza Titan Ultra.
It's like, I after a while, I put the controller down and I was like, you motherfuckers.
You sons of bitches.
Because ideally, what they want you to do is play through, get a decent score, get shit for getting a score, because you do get loot at the end of each run. And then they want you to go back when you're more powered up, when your characters have gotten more XP, you've unlocked some different perks, and then go back and do it again and get a better time. But it just feels really cruel that you can take the basic shit and be like 1 or 2 seconds from the gold consistently. That's not necessarily a complaint in the game. That's just a complaint in how I play the game.
Yeah.
I'm consciously aware of that. And I was like, meh. There are probably people who smash it and got gold every level every time they touched it and did just fine. That's not me. There's some really neat mechanics, even with the fighting, to try to keep your speed built up. And you're each time you complete one of these scenes where you have to actually battle, it will come up and tell you if you've done good or done poorly or did really well. You'll actually get a thumbs up or a flat hand or a thumbs down to tell you if you're on par for where you should be for that point in that run. You're supposed to, in theory, you're supposed to keep your momentum while you're fighting by grabbing poles to spin around, gain speed, and change direction. You can bounce off of the walls. You can wall run rather than having to jump. You can buy an ability that lets you triple jump instead of just double jump. There's a lot of different little tips and tricks to keep your momentum going. But remember how I said sometimes the screen just gets overwhelmed and you just end up pressing X and hoping for the best. So you lose a lot of momentum in those later levels because they are just so overwhelming and you can't even see the things like the walls and the poles that you're supposed to be using to help you out.
I was so bad at keeping my momentum too. Like I constantly fucked up on the poles. I would jump against the wall and instead of jumping off, I would just slide down it. I was so bad at this game.
Really?
Yes.
Chill.
I couldn't keep my speed up.
Were you 2 seconds away from gold times?
No, I was much further than that.
Yes. I am not as shit at this as I thought I was. It's them little victories again.
Oh my God, Vertically Impaired just subbed for 7 months in a row.
7 months of questionable decision making.
Yes, very much so.
Congratulations. I'm sorry. Thanks, anyway, back buddy. To the review.
Hey, I got to do the shout out.
It's true. I lost my spot too.
I sucked at the game. That's where we were.
You did suck it, but I didn't have that Joe sucks at the game in my notes. Is a terrible part.
You should write that stuff down. It's important.
I really should. I did think that the number of items and the upgrade potential for your characters and the way that you could customize them was really creative. There was just so many different items. I have one complaint, though.
Let's hear it.
I absolutely hate when a game will let you buy an item in a shop for 100 gold and then turn around and when you need to resell it because you get it out of a loot crate, tells you it's worth 15. I hate that shit. Why is the markup so goddamn high?
Yeah, I can double understand like half. Fine. But,
yeah, but you want to take double it for what you're going to let me sell it for? Fine, I can understand. That would have meant a lot of shit would have been 30 gold rather than 250.
Yeah.
It was really frustrating. I do like that not every item works for every character because it forces you to think about how you're going to set up the characters and how you're going to use them rather than just being like, oh, well, I'll immediately put the highest item on the best thing and go. It doesn't work that way. So instead of just being able to take my highest geared items and put them on my most brawly, brutal character, I had to think, okay, this character is a little weaker, but she moves faster. And instead of dumping all of this heavyweight gear on her, that's only going to bump her up a couple little pieces or a couple little bits of damage. Instead, I can give her something that's gonna make her poisonous, and she inflicts just massive amounts of poison damage. And then she's far more useful. So then you can bring her in, have her do a couple small hits, and inflicts large amounts of poison damage on multiple characters, or on the enemies, and then swap out for your other character, have her come in and actually deal out brutal damage. So it forced you to think about how you were going to play with the characters and how you were going to get better times doing that. The other thing I want to point out, it's pretty.
It is. It's a good looking game.
It's a very pretty game. And I was just really drawn in by the art style, the character development. You can tell a lot of thought and love went into all of it. And it's just gorgeous.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You sucked at the game. What else do you think about it?
I thought it was a lot of fun. It was fast. It was fluid. And despite how bad I was at the game, I am going to keep playing it and working on it and trying to improve how I do in the game, you know, in between races and Forza, obviously.
How those pole racing challenges treat you?
The less said, the better. But in your opinion, $19.99 on this one, what do you think of it?
I give it a buy it. I think it's definitely worth it. It's really well fleshed out. The story is interesting. You're not going to overwhelmingly be paying attention to the story, though. You're just going to go in and run fast and beat shit up, and I like that.
Yeah. I agree. I do think the price feels a little bit high. I kind of wish it was $15 instead of $20, but it does have the content to justify it. So if you're into it and if it looks interesting to you, I think it's worth the purchase.
I agree. Next.
Next game is called Vegas Party, developed by Raylight Games, published by Funbox Media, released September 28th on Xbox One for $24.99. Welcome into the gambling-friendly universe of this over-the-top version of Las Vegas City. Played as a race, the goal is to reach the end of the strip before anyone else. Manage your token account, avoid the dangers, take advantage of your gaming skills and your insolent luck. Trust no one and forget the meaning of the word mercy because it does not apply here. Cole, tell us about Vegas Party.
For as pretty as Speed Brawl was, this game is not. And I'm sorry to open that way, but let's just go ahead and address the elephant in the room.
Not a pretty game?
Not a pretty game. That's okay.
not all games have to be super pretty.
Not everything is Forza. but it's okay. There's two ways. I feel like there was a third mode. I didn't write it down. There's two main modes. And that's quick play and the strip mode that you were speaking of. So since the summary mentioned strip mode, I'll bring that up first. Strip mode is very much like if you took one side of a Monopoly board. So you kind of have a strip. And imagine that for strip mode. You have a strip. There's buildings on each side. There's some random little nonsense going on every little bit. But there's different little squares on the strip. Your character gets to roll the dice and then moves ever how many the dice says. There's only one die. It doesn't have multiple dice for the move because there's only one, you know, like one lane for the strip.
Yeah.
So it's just one die and you roll it, you move ever how many it tells you. The strip's laid out with different kinds of squares. Some of them will have you play the Vegas type mini games like bingo or roulette or blackjack. Where others are kind of like a chance card, if you will, and will either like have you give 70 credits to everybody else you're playing against, or have you luck out and get 100 credits for no good reason.
Hey, free money's always good.
Yeah. Unless it's going to the AI and then fuck those guys. this is up to 4 player for this as well. So you can play local co-op. There is no online, but it is local, not co-op technically, it's versus, isn't it? If you land on one of the games, then it'll come up. You'll go into a little themed out casino. Some of them look like, you know, Egyptian pyramids and have hieroglyphs everywhere. Not pretty ones, but they're there. And others will, one looks like a haunted house and there's little ghosts floating around behind the dealer. You can choose when it's your turn from 3 randomized mini games. So it'll come up and it'll give you a choice like bingo, blackjack, or roulette. And then you pick whichever one you want to play. And then once you've picked, you'll go in, you'll play that mini game. And whoever comes out, you know, whatever tokens you win or lose while you're in that mini game, you win or lose from your overall score as well. The interesting thing is that you're not out of the game once you hit zero. Like, it'll come up and it'll give you another 1,000 credits. It doesn't end until somebody gets to the end of the board. It'll be like, yeah, you can have another 1,000 credits, but you have to go back for, you know, to the beginning, or you have to go back 3 spaces or whatever it randomly pulls out of its ass. Strip mode is probably not the most exciting thing ever. It does give an interesting twist to the game. I think most people that play it are probably just going to play quick mode, which lets you pick whatever one of the mini games you want to play forever, how long you want to play them. There are 8 games in all, including slots, which is weird to play multiplayer. slots.
I don't even know how you would do slots multiplayer.
So when you play slots, basically you pick, I've always thought that slots was like whatever is in the middle is that and you win. But this actually lets you pick a line. So you can pick a diagonal row or a horizontal row or whatever. It's like 5 options of rows. And then whichever one you pick, if anything lands in that row, whether it be diagonal or whatever, it qualifies, you win. Mm-hmm. But it has to be in the row that you pick. So everybody has a row and their color makes a line across the slot machine so that you know that one won, I did not. You won't win. For the record. The AI cheats. That's all I'm saying. I don't know how, but it's true. And then it just has you do that for 4 turns. Slots was weird because in order to pull the handle, you have to pull left trigger, but the handle's on the right side of the screen. That's just a weird quirk for me, and I just like, maybe the designer was left-handed. I don't know, but it seems weird to have you pull the opposite trigger. There's also bingo, which is not at all played like normal bingo. Instead of having a number being called out over and over, there are 3 balls that will fall or otherwise roll across the screen. And you have to find the ones that are on your card and click it. If somebody else clicks it, though, they get it and not you. And if you click one that's not on your card, you randomly lose one of your other markers.
Ew.
So be careful. Don't mistake that 18 for a 13.
I'm guessing that happened to you.
I don't want to talk about it. My cough drop is giving out on me. There's also blackjack, red or black, which is where you guess if there's 5 cards and you guess is this one going to be red, is it going to be black, red or black. There's also darts. I don't have no idea how to pronounce baccarat. I don't know. Greyhounds, which is essentially just skee ball, but you are locked into a certain position and wherever it decides to put your unfortunate asset is where you are, and you can't like move vertically or horizontally on that skee ball bar. You're just stuck. And I got stuck in the corner and it's like, yeah, good luck to you, bitch. There's also Texas Hold'em, which is not at all played like any Texas Hold'em I have ever played. Instead of a dealer giving you 2 cards, a random set of cards, I was trying to do the math in my head, I think there's 15 it puts on the table, are just laid out on the table and then they're flipped like kind of rapid style. I could see your expression on the screen and I'm telling you, it's every bit as weird as it sounds because it's not how it's supposed to be played.
You're cheating and looking.
I am. But like the cards flip up and you can see what they are and you click the 2 you want.
Weird.
And then you bet if once it puts down the turn, the flop and the river, and you're just like, okay. pretty sure that the AI are going to cheat here, but no big deal. It's fine. I think that there's enough changes to classic games that it makes it a little less fun because you don't know how to play it and actually win it.
Yeah.
And if you were playing this in a party mode with 3 other people in the room with you and you had played it before, they're fucked. You have an unfair advantage. Like my kids... Excuse me. My kids have played, you know, Texas Hold'em and stuff with me. We play poker in my house. That's how we do this. You start out when you're 5. We get them young. But they've played, you know, Texas Hold'em and Blackjack and stuff with me. And they're familiar with the rules. And then even number one saw it and she was like, what's going on?
This shit's weird, mommy.
This is not what it's supposed to be. Overall, I would give this a really tentative try it. But just know what you're getting into going into it. Because you may not be getting the kind of games you think you're getting.
No.
Definitely watch a video on it. Because it's really hard to describe accurately. I am losing my voice.
Well, the good thing is that I'm up next.
Good.
So, pop a cough drop because the next game...
My eyes are watering.
Next game to talk about is called Unknown Fate, developed by Marslit Games, published by 1C Company, released September 6th on Steam for $14.99. Unknown Fate is an enigmatic, story-driven action-adventure set in a surreal world full of mind-twisting puzzles and bizarre creatures. Soon you will have all the answers to your questions, but you still have so much to see. Dark Mika covered this one and wrote in a review, and here's what she's got to say. Unknown Fate is a first-person puzzle semi-platformer. You play as an amnesiac man in an odd world. Your name is Richard. The game doesn't tell you that for a while, but the Steam page does, so meh. The world is weird. It's a barren wasteland. Many parts of it have giant wires coming out of it, and often you find other enlarged items like a toy bunny 3 times the size of you or tax over 4 times larger than you. However, again, you're in another world. You're not shrunk. Your quest, like it or not, is to do what the elusive guardians tell you to do in order to gain your memories. There's an interesting mechanic for the puzzles and platforming in this game, as they're both often tied together. You get a bracelet-like thing that allows you to do various things as you obtain it, and then it's 2 upgrades. The base bracelet lets you fight enemies, which involves a stun blast and a ball shot, which kill them. The first upgrade lets you pick up and move certain objects and allow you to rotate some objects. The second and final upgrade lets you shoot a ball out and then explode it, which causes a giant circle of slowed time. The platforms are what most of the puzzles are. You have to set things up to get across chasms and the like. The skills are rather fun to use. I'm more used to like Portal and the like, so this was pretty cool. Graphically, it's kind of all over the place. Some things look really cool, really pretty, and others bland as hell. I found most of the characters and animals you see, which aren't common, are rather pretty. Some of them looked really cool as well. Many of them are a mix between machine and animal, which is really cool looking, but they're not, like, completely robotic, so it's pretty neat. The landscapes, though, they're the exact opposite. Most of them are rather boring to look at. None of it is really super high quality, but the landscapes have it the worst. The first area you're in is the best. After that, it's all pretty much just here's a color surrounded by black walls for this hour. Now here's a giant place of this other color with black walls for an hour. What's worse is their graphics claim is seemingly batshit insane. The graphics card that they suggest I looked up in comparison, and mine was 8 to 10 times better than all 3 of the ones they stated the game needed to play. I can't talk. But on the lowest settings possible, with nothing else up, the game crashed my display driver fairly regularly because it was pushing my graphics card so hard. This is the only game that's ever done that to me, but I should have been able to be fine on max settings. The story is somewhat interesting and keeps you twisted because you only see tiny fragments of his memory and no one explains anything to him. As such, you never really know what's happened, and that mystery is what keeps the game afloat. It's not a, I'm dying, I must know, but instead more of a, I'd like to know what happened, so I'll continue. Which is, you know, always good with a game. The cutscenes in the game and everyone is voice acted, the quality is fairly high for it, but the script was kind of off. It's another one of those games where, yeah, they're speaking English, but it's not quite right, not because of the accent, but instead because of what they say and how they say things. It ended up feeling somewhat robotic sometimes. Other times it made me laugh because it was just wrong. For $15 on Steam, I'd say wait for a sale. If you have a really good, fairly new gaming PC like an i7 within the past 5 years, sure. Otherwise, I wouldn't buy this. It's about 4 to 5 hours long. It's sometimes difficult. It's linear, but no hand-holding, no objectives. You have to figure out what to do and where to go the whole time. It's a decent game, but the environments are bland, the voice acting is off, and I honestly don't know what gaming rig you actively need to play the damn thing properly. It's an okay game, but not in my top 100. It doesn't help that the game ends without answering all the questions, meaning they want to make another game or DLC. I hate when anyone, including AAA companies, do that, but that's a personal gripe of mine.
We don't do personal gripes on this show.
Kind of weird that she had a graphics card that was so much more powerful than what was recommended, but she had so many problems with it. She actually told me that we're not sure if it was the game that caused it, but her power supply blew while she was playing it.
Yikes.
So that's kind of why this is a later review than it should have been, considering it came out in early September. She had to have her PC taken to Geek Squad and taken care of because the power supply blew.
Geek Squad!
Yeah, so that's kind of crazy that that shit happened, but yeah, it's weird that they say it works with some graphics cards and hers is so much more powerful, but still struggled with it. Doesn't make sense.
She broke her PC for the show, Joe. How do you feel?
Ha 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 ha.
That's about what I expected, yeah.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called League of Evil, developed by WobblyWare, published by Radleika Games. It released September 19th on Xbox One for $4.99. League of Evil is an action game where you, as a bionic super agent, take on the mission to defeat the League of Evil. Use your acrobatic skills to punch your way through levels filled with deadly traps and defeat your enemies. The world is counting on you. Cole, the world was counting on you. How did you do?
I destroyed the evil, but not all of it, because there's a fuck ton of evil.
There is a fuck ton of evil in this game.
There's over 100 levels, which they call them missions, but there's over 100 levels. And there's literally one chapter that's just straight up called the impossible missions. So, no thank you. I'm glad you warned me. This is a 2D platformer. In the same kind of vein, like, if you saw this, you'd be like, oh, like Super Meat Boy. But oddly enough, I didn't think it was as hard as a game like Super Meat Boy, or even 10 Second Ninja. 10 Second Ninja was hard. I didn't think this game was that big of a struggle, and I actually did fairly well on it, despite being old and arthritic, and having the reaction time of a potato. A dead potato that's got a little mold on it.
Oh, boy.
Like I said, there are four chapters. Chapter one has like 60 missions. Chapter two has 30. It's very oddly split up. It's like, okay, one has a fuck ton of missions, the other does not. And I don't know why. Once you get to the end of a chapter, you get to take out the big boss for the League of Eagle. Lord have mercy.
League of Eagle.
League of Evil. And it's the same thing you've done the rest of the game. So avoid the electric pits, avoid the turrets that want to shoot at you, avoid the people that want to kill you, get to the end and stab the evil minion. It's basically the long and short of it. There are briefcases in each mission, which serves as like the equivalent of your bandages from Super Meat Boy.
So collectible.
Yeah, collect that shit, get the fuck out. Don't collect it if you don't want to. Sometimes I would get all the way to the end and be like, oh, I killed the bad guy and forgot that there was a collectible, and then had to play it again. Oddly enough, I really just didn't think it was that hard, and I think I enjoyed it more because of that. Because generally, I play these kind of platformers, and by like the fifth or sixth level, I'm like, my hand fucking hurts and I hate the world. And this one, I just kept going for some weird reason. I was like, well, I'm accomplishing things. Next! I kept waiting for that wall. I'm sure that wall is the impossible missions, but I'm smart enough to know when to quit. Sorry to Radleika Games and the developer.
You got to know your limits.
It's really simple controls, you know, A to jump or double jump. B gives you a little dash attack so you can take out enemies. And otherwise, it's just your thumbstick running around wherever you need to go. It's not a glitz and glam kind of game, but it's simple and it's effective and it does what it's trying to do really well.
And it's $5.
And it's $5. So on that note, you just want to be like, buy it. And even if you're like, oh, but what if it's too hard? Then you put off by the whole impossible missions chapter. Fuck it. Why not? You're still going to get a lot of really good levels to play in before you get fucked.
Yeah.
So I'm not mad at it. I had a lot of fun. Buy the game.
Sounds good.
Yay. Next.
Next game is called Pillar, developed and published by Michael Arts, released September 26th on Xbox One for $7.99. Lost in an intimate, snowy town, a palette of individuals are in search of a mysterious artifact said to bring great knowledge and understanding. Lead each character through their quest in this collection of mini-games, each with unique personalities and challenges. Maybe their paths aren't so different after all. Cole, tell us about Pillar.
Pillar is from the same developer as Path of Modus. And so it still has that art style that we saw in Path of Modus, but it also has that same kind of inspirational gameplay mechanic where you're kind of supposed to feel like you learned something by the time you get to the end. It's interesting how they try to weave in life lessons and to inspire you while you're just playing through and solving general, you know, brain teaser type puzzles. For the sake of gameplay, that really is what you're going to be doing. The puzzles revolve around the different personalities. When you start the game, it will ask you what kind of personality you are, and you can choose. You can choose to be distant, focused, giving, capable, renewing, or enduring. The one that you choose affects how you play and what kind of puzzles you solve. So, for example, if you choose to be distant, you play as an artist. If this gets a little too real. an artist that doesn't want to deal with people.
Where did I hear that before?
Right? It sounds so familiar. I just can't put my finger on it. You know, I think they stole my life story. But you, in the distant story, when your character sees other people, you either have to figure out a way to get around them without interacting with them, or they find you, they see you, and they chase you down. And that's horrible.
Because people suck.
So in order to get around them, what you'll have to do is press Y, and then it gives you the option to place speakers and switches. And then you can press the speaker and a switch, and it will have the people that are near that speaker within its kind of line of sight, if you will, will be drawn to it so that you can get past them without actually having to deal with them. I need one of those in real life.
So it's kind of like a stealth minigame.
For that part. Same for focused. Again, you're going to be trying to get through people without having to interact with them. But instead of putting down the speakers, you can... It's like a thing she shoots, and I couldn't tell what the fuck it was to save myself. But it makes the people turn around and go another way so that you can get by them without having to deal with them. However, for the giving and capable gameplay, their puzzles are done simultaneously. And the same for renewing and enduring. But for giving and capable specifically, I really, really like the puzzles and how they were handled, because you had the two characters on the screen and they were played simultaneously, and you had a series of light switches and they were all numbered and they had a corresponding lamp. Some of the lamps are broken. Some of them are just burnt out. Some of the switches will break the lamps. Some of them will light them up. You can only light one time, but you can break it a fuck ton. So you had to move the two characters by switching back and forth between them. You would have to repair a lamp with one and then turn on the light with the other, and then move your way through the whole series till you got to the exit. I thought that was just really creative and well done. And some of the light puzzles were just, I was ready to cry. It was like, please get me through this. They get complicated. Because you start off with, I think, two or four in the early puzzles. By the end, you're fixing as many as eight. And you have to juggle, like, okay, if I step on that switch, do I have a way to fix the light so that I can actually light it back up? Or if I step on the light, and do I have to cross over a switch that's going to break it to get to one of the other switches? So it was just really an impressive brain teaser. And I really enjoyed working through them. And I was kind of impressed with myself because I didn't need a guide. And I was happy. I was like, I figured this shit out on my own. It was hard, but I did it.
Proud of you.
Yay, me. You do collect notes from solving the puzzles, and so there is like a collectible aspect. It will show you if the puzzle that you're working on is is going to have a note on it. So it's not like it's something that you can miss. You have to do the shit to get through the story anyway. I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was very different. It was well done. The puzzles were well thought out. They were, some of them were straight up hard, but it was impressive how carefully they had been designed. Oh no.
Uh-oh.
Okay. It's not important. There's this little old lady that calls my house randomly. And then when I answer the phone, she goes, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Bitch, what are you yelling me for?
You called me.
Who are you?"
Oh, boy.
It's been happening for years. That's who it was. That's why I just hung up.
Nice.
But I thought it was incredibly well done. It was really interesting. I think maybe the character design and passive modus was slightly better than the character design for Pillar. Maybe I'm just being picky, though. I don't know.
Well, I think it's an art style that it's going to be a love it or hate it kind of thing.
Yeah. And the thing is that as soon as you see it, you're like, yeah, I recognize this, you know?
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. The artist for these games, he has a very specific style, and he's very good at what he does. I'll give him credit there. He's absolutely very good, even if it's not particularly a style that I'm drawn to. I just think he does a good job all the same. So yeah, the game is fun, the puzzles are great, and I think you should buy it.
Cool, so $8, your verdict is buy it.
Yep. Oh, it's only $8?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely buy it. It makes it even better. It's not even $10, it's $8.
Yeah. There you go. All right, we're tagging out Cole for a minute, bringing in Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
Good, great, wonderful, fantastic, superlatives. I have arrived.
You're good at superlatives.
I have some. Man.
How's life treating you?
It's good. It's, man, thank goodness the week is almost over as of this recording. Because, man.
Long week?
My weekend. Every week's a long week right now. It's been a decent week, all things considered. I'm just ready to... I had a very productive weekend last weekend, so I'm hoping to repeat success this weekend. But we will see.
Nice.
We'll see.
I know we have a game to talk about with you, but before we get to that, I want to get your opinion on the Telltale news. What do you think of that situation?
Oh, man, that's a shit show. Man, what aspect of, like, so my initial reaction was like, I think like most people was like shock, like, oh my God, Telltale, like they've been such like a huge thing in like the past few years. And it was like, I can't believe they're just going away after a second. But then it's like, after reading into the situation, you know, a little bit, it's like, oh, they... Because I remember how after the first season of The Walking Dead, which, mind you, that was the only Telltale series I paid full price for and played all the way through. Like, I own Wolf Among Us. I played one episode. I got some other series through bundles and sales and shit. But I remember, yeah, after Walking Dead, they very quickly blew out to like four studios and grabbed all these licenses. And I was just like, man, and they're churning this shit out. And I'm just like, man, this must be working for them like real well. If they're, you know, licensing these games, all their stuff is on iPad and whatnot. And apparently all the only things that made money for them ever were Minecraft and that first season of The Walking Dead. And all the rest of it was in the red while meanwhile, like grinding their workers into dust, trying to meet these episodic release deadlines. So,
which they missed anyway.
Yeah, well, it just seems like they, you know, they had one thing that was successful. Like they figured out with Walking Dead, they're like, oh, we can do these narrative based adventure games rather than having to come up with like puzzles and shit, and people like, this is the thing, we got it, let's go, let's, you know. And they dove in on it and way overextended themselves. You remember this, like, man, Walking Dead, the first season of that was years ago. That was, I'm typing obviously to remember. Yeah, that was 2012. So
was it that long?
Yeah, Well, I remember because it was like that or the first XCOM reboot that I was like considered for my game of the year. That was like 1 and 2 that year. And I'm like, well, they've had XCOM 2 and XCOM 2 came out a few years ago. So yeah, yeah. So they've been going along at this breakneck pace for almost 6 years. And whoo. So yeah, and then they just shit on everyone that worked there and just like dropped the bomb, sent them out the door, no severance, like a week of health care, like just paid out nothing, just like you're gone, and we have the skeleton crew, and then after a few days they're like, well, we might finish this season of The Walking Dead. We're in talks with partners to finish that. I was like, you had a team, motherfuckers. Like, if this was really important to you, maybe you should have kept those people on to finish the series, you know?
Yeah, the
maybe
people who were making it.
Maybe that the thing to do. Or perhaps, you know, if you suddenly have, I don't know, or getting finances in to finish this, like, maybe you should take care of your workers first. And they're getting fucking sued. But, I mean, it just seems like that company, unfortunately, because I think everybody kind of has, like, some manner of like warm and fuzzy spot for them and like what they were trying to do, you know, over the course of the past 6 years. I don't know where to remember that sentence. and it just seems like that company was just horribly mismanaged on the inside and, you know, was not at all a good example of how to treat your workers in the video game industry. And It's unfortunate that they made so many bad decisions for so long, like that they didn't like expand more carefully, you know,
yeah.
That they didn't update their tech. Cause like the game, like if correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Walking Dead, the final season is running on the same tech as the first one. You know?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same engine.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, they never stopped to try to like update themselves and like, you know, now we got new consoles and all these other platforms and, you know, they still have bugs in their games of like saves getting corrupted or disappearing or things not carrying over, you know, the most important thing that needs to happen, you know?
It's like the Bethesda engine, but without the sales.
Yeah. And you know, even they, you know, updated that after, like, when they came to, I guess it was the last generation at this point. You know, so I shouldn't, you know, so much. But, yeah, it's a mess. It sucks the most for the workers that just got kicked to the curb with nothing. It is unfortunate for the fans, especially, like, for fans of the Walking Dead series who have been with it for this long, and they might not get to see the end of it.
Which that's the biggest travesty
up in the air. Yeah. It's just crazy how poorly this is handled. Like it seems like brakes should have been pumped somewhere along the line. Like maybe they should have pulled back, on some of these series they were doing. Like if they lost money on Batman season one, why make a Batman season two?
They'll lose more money.
Yeah. If you made money on Minecraft, why not make more Minecraft? Like,
well, to be fair, they did. It was supposed to be 5 episodes, and then they bumped it to 8 afterwards.
Yeah, but I mean, you could say, oh, we're doing another season of that, and because like that Minecraft story mode, that's a few years old at this point, isn't it? Minecraft story mode. God, is this news only like? God, it's not even a week. But yeah, I remember like when it hit, it was just like, what is going on? This is crazy. It came out in 2015, Minecraft story mode. So don't tell me y'all couldn't have had like a second season of that coming around.
Shit's crazy. But yeah, I wanted to get your opinion on that before we continued with the reviews.
Yeah, sure. No, my opinion is that Telltale apparently sucks as a company, and I'm glad that, I don't know, so many other companies were reaching out with, like, you know, saying they're hiring, so hopefully those people find jobs. And
I hope so. There were, what, over 200 workers lost their jobs?
Yeah, it seems the scenario in which everyone leaves the situation happy at this point seems impossible. It doesn't seem like the workers are going to get their money. They're certainly not going to get their jobs back. And I don't know if, and even if fans get the remainder of the final season of The Walking Dead, you know, what is that? Because it's not the same people working on it. You know, who the fuck knows what that thing is going to look like. And it's been pulled off from purchase at this point. Like, you can't purchase that season pass anymore, which is wise. But
yeah,
yeah, I...
Sucks. Anyway, you got a game to talk about. We should probably do that.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah. In happier news.
In happier news, the next game to talk about is called Velocity 2X, developed by Future Lab, published by Curve Digital, released September 20th on the Switch for $19.99. Lieutenant Kai Tana, a former test pilot, was captured by a race of hostile aliens. During her captivity, Kai's body has undergone various cybernetic modifications. Freed by a precious ally, she must now use her new abilities and teleporting power of the Quarp Jet to evade the Valk and free the universe from this dangerous threat. I'm sure I butchered one of those names in there, but Tim, what is this game?
What is this game? So, this is a game that is part shooting, part side-scroller. So, whenever I think a game that, like, especially a 2D game that, like, mashes two genres together, I immediately start thinking of things for the NES, like Blaster Master or Guardian Legend, where, you know, you'll have a vehicle part, and then you'll have an on-foot part, and that's kind of what this game tries to do. It's not trying. You do those two things. So yeah, it jumps gameplay between two kinds of you have like vertical scrolling ship levels, and you have little side scrolling like 2D platformer exploration levels. And you know, the game starts out where it's kind of like, here's a ship level, here's a side scrolling level, but eventually you are, seems like, mainly doing like the top down shooter, like ship levels. That seems to be the bulk of the game. That's just what it feels like to me. It feels like even once you get going, like most levels start you off in the ship, and then you will find corridors you need to jump into to side scroll around later on in levels. But ultimately, most levels feature both gameplay types. I guess the thing that I'll just jump out with, the thing that drives me fucking nuts about this game right off the bat, is that there's no damn button remapping, which pisses me off much, really only in the side scrolling levels. When you're out of the ship, when you're in these side scrolling areas, like the thing that bugs me is that you control with the left stick, you shoot with the right stick. So it's analog shooting, almost twin stick shootery, but you jump with the A button. So you can't like your thumb has to come off of shooting in order to jump. And I really, really wish that you could like put jump on a shoulder button so that you could do both easily, nicely, smoothly, mm-hmm. but you can't. And I hate that. I hate it. I fucking hate it. It really drags down all of those side-scrolling segments for me, because it just feels clunky. It's like, I'll be running along, like, I'll shoot some stuff, and then it'll be like, oh, okay, I have to stop doing one thing and move my thumb over to jump, rather than just doing, like, a nice, smooth, like, jump transition, you know? Like, just keep shooting, jumping. And the game seems, like, really built and intended to for you to, like, be able to speed through it, you know?
Yeah.
But that just, it's just like, it just frustrates me so much. I wish that, you know, I mean, Metroid has existed for a long time, and they have solved these problems of running and shooting and jumping in 2D spaces. So I don't feel like it's rocket science to do it and make it feel good. And even in Samus Returns, they have like analog shooting, like you hold down a button and you can do analog aiming with the thumbstick, and it's fine. Or that thumb slider doodad. It's not really a stick.
The thumb
nip. Like a melted stick, the thumb nip. Yeah. Man, remember the 3DS when they had that bolt-on second thumb stick?
Oh, God.
Remember that thing? Boy. So you can't jump and shoot at the same time. So none of the side-scrolling felt really good to me. And that just ended up kind of being, like, just always just sticks with me. Like, any level where it's like, I kind of be a little bummed when it was time to go indoors and do something. You mentioned the teleport. I also like, this is slightly less annoying, but the teleport you control with a reticle, so you put it exactly where you want to go. And I feel like, again, it would be snappier and more intuitive. It was just like, okay, I'm going to point in this direction and my teleport has this level of range. Cause you only ever teleport so far. The screen is only so big, you know?
Yeah.
There's only so much room to move. I think it would just make more sense. Like, okay, I'm going to point in this direction. I'm going to teleport. Because it doesn't like let you teleport into walls anyways. So you can't like kill yourself. So it just feels like rather than pressing L, putting the cursor where I want it to go and then hitting a button, it would be better just to point and go, you know, just psh, this way, go pew. Especially because, and again, this ends up, I feel like, being more of a detriment to the side-scrolling levels, is that sometimes you need to teleport rapidly many times in a row because they'll just put a bunch of walls in the way. You'll be like running and then it's like, okay, wall, wall, wall. And sometimes even when you're going like vertically, like either up or down, you can't jump up because it's a wall. So you have to teleport up. So, which also got me in the habit of straight up teleporting. Third, I'm trying to get all the negative stuff out of the way first, just like, you eventually unlock a like remote teleporter thing, which, well, you eventually unlock it in both modes. There's like a story going on, but it's not like you find power-ups. It's just like you'll come to a level and like your kind of your partner, whatever, the guy that's helping you through this will be like, hey, you got this ability now. You got this tech. So use it. So then suddenly you have a new ability. So you get the ability as a ship to like drop a beacon thing. So it's like, okay, the path in this level is splitting, so drop the thing so you can go down one path, shoot the switches you need to shoot, and then teleport back to it, and then take the other path, which is, I don't know, they play that a lot through those levels once that mechanic is introduced, and I'm just kind of like, I don't know if that's like an awesome, intuitive piece of level design. I'm just kind of like, I still got to go down, I still have to do both things, like, I don't know how this is really enhancing the experience, but whatever. And then, again, in the side-scrolling levels, you get this little teleporter beacon, which you have to point, well, they have you point and throw, so it's like, there's a like a passageway upward that is like bent and such, so you gotta aim, point, and kind of like bounce it off the wall up onto the platform so you can then teleport up, or like throw it over a hazard. And the thing that the thing that drives me nuts about this is that it's not like, okay, I'm going to throw my teleporter up here and then I'm going to push a button to teleport to it. It's like, no, you need to go into the map menu and then select the beacon point and then teleport to it. And it's super clunky. It's just like, and I know part of the thing is that you can put down multiple beacons so you can teleport to multiple places. And that is, you know, relevant, but also it's just like, clunky. It's just clunky, and as you go through levels, sometimes like you'll drop a beacon and the beacon will stay there, and then like I've gotten to points where I'm standing there and I need one, but I have to go into my menu in the map and scroll through them, and they make it easy to scroll through them with your WASD pad, and you have to like deactivate them to return them to yourself, and it's just like, okay, I guess that's fine, whatever.
I'm just laughing over WASD pad.
Yeah, it's certainly not a real D-pad. It's just clunky. It's a shame because generally speaking, the game is fun and like it looks good. I really like the sound design of like the music and the sound effects, and the graphics are like nice and crisp and clean, and it's easy to tell what's what. There's a lot of levels. Like the base game, like the base story is 50 levels, and you get to the end of a level and you are rated based like on the time, your how much shit you shot, how many survivors you rescued and stuff, and then you get a certain amount of experience, and that unlocks, you know, each level has a certain amount of experience you need. So very quickly, by like level 10, I had like at least almost like level 20 was unlocked. You could just jump ahead, you don't have to play them in order. You can just jump way ahead if you feel like it.
That's weird. Cool.
Yeah, whatever. The more choice you have in a game, the better, I say. But on top of those, like, 50 story levels, the game has, like, a bunch of extra mission packs, so there's plenty of content here. And you know, it plays, other than the clunkiness brought on by kind of their control decisions, it plays pretty smooth. Like, I really enjoy, like, the ship controls feel good flying around in space and teleporting around. Like, I had a really easy time just kind of zipping around in those levels. Even if, like, again, with 50 levels, some you start to see a lot of elements over and over again. Like, they aren't wildly different from one another. Like, they kind of change, like, the art palette, like, a bit every, you know, some odd amount of levels. But it's still kind of like, okay, I'm flying down corridors, I'm teleporting over here, I need to shoot this switch. You have to shoot the switches in order. They're numbered. So it's like 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, I'm going to shoot 1, 2, 3. Where's 4? Oh, I have to go into this corridor and then pop back out and then shoot 5 and then teleport through that. Just kind of a weird choice is that they give you power-ups for your ship in some levels, but not others. But you'll still pick up, like, weapon recharge power-ups in the levels where you don't have a special weapon for your ship. That just seems like a weird... Again, just another weird decision, but I know I bagged on it a lot. But it's just like these things that frustrate me when it's like this game is clearly like well made and like pretty fun, but there's these things that just stood in my way of like really having an excellent time, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like looks good, plays pretty well again, other than my control gripes, sounds good, like plenty of content. Pretty solid.
So minor gripes aside, $20 on it. What do you think of it?
I think this is going to have to be a try it. If they had button remapping, then it's a much easier recommendation for people. At least from my perspective, it was like, yeah, I didn't like the controls. If I could remap some of the controls, that would make a big difference for me. But, I can't say that, you know, you'd be able to pick up the game and feel great about it, especially with so much other great stuff on the Switch right now. That seems like a more like it's definitely not like a deny. It's not like a hard pass, but it's like, yeah, maybe wait, keep an eye on it, put it on your wish list, think about it. It's a try it.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So middle of the road.
Yeah. That's all. I mean, it's a little bit, on the it's good above, side of the
it's
road.
Just, it's the gripes, you know, that you have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if they the add button remapping, we'll have to take another look at it.
That'd be great. I'd love it. Please and thank you. But I mean, the game has been out on like PS4 for a while now, like since last year at least. So, and PC, I believe. So if you didn't
and
do
Xbox,
it.
Xbox, yeah.
Yeah, it's been around. So I don't know, man. Whatever.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Tim, it's always good having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
I got no puns today.
Nothing
for Velocity 2X. I didn't think about it. Like sometimes I like sit. Well, because I forget. Like, man, I was like ready to do this review last week, but I was sick, and I had recorded a podcast about the PlayStation Classic. You know, speculating as to what's going to be on it, that's on Fat Gatsby. plug and like, man, I got done recording that podcast and it was like only like 40 minutes and I felt like shit afterwards, and I was like, okay, I shouldn't record. I was like ready to go last Thursday. I'm like, no, no. And then like now here we are a week later. But it's all good.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, no, oh my god, our house was like racked with sickness for like 2 weeks. It's like soon as like Dickie, you were like, oh man, he's sniffing and coughing, there's patient zero right there. Like, kids are filthy. Like, they bring the sickness into the house because they got these weak little immune systems, and then you're just like living with it. So like, yeah, we were all sick like at varying times and varying levels of disability. So yeah, I'm very happy to not be, I'm still blowing my nose a lot, but I'm not like coughing and I'm not sore and I can talk, obviously, so that's good. And you know, yeah, working on another review for next week.
Indeed, I'm looking forward to that one too.
Yeah, it's good.
But I guess we will return to the conclusion of your normally scheduled episode.
Tag back in.
All right, and final game to talk about tonight is called Deadliners, developed by Dual Studios, published by Rooftop Panda, released September 28th on Xbox One for $7.99. The rules are simple. Each player controls a line on the playfield and has a certain number of shots and clears available for use in combat. Invite your friends to have a great time playing Deadliners. What is Deadliners?
So, Deadliners... One of my dogs just broke loose.
Sweet.
Hi. Deadliners is basically four-player Snake. and that's really the long and short of it. It does have a lot of different game modes, though, which is kind of interesting, given that it's just basically Snake. You wouldn't think you could get this many game modes out of it. I was actually looking for... Okay. The game modes are free-for-all. What did I do to my notes here?
I don't know. What did you do?
I don't know. I was drunk. I was on a lot of cough syrup. there was a free-for-all mode. There's survival. There's a skill challenge. There's a capture the flag mode. It's really interesting to see something as basic as don't hit a wall turn into so many different game types.
Yeah.
But it's also really infuriating to play because you have the lines, you have the square basically to start with, and that's it. That's the playing field. And then when the game first starts, everybody picks like a little icon that will represent them for their line. It flashes at the beginning of the screen, and then you never see it again. So if you didn't catch which line was yours, you're dead from the start.
Yeah.
And that flashes fast. If you do manage to survive because you saw which one flashed as yours, all the lines are the same color, and there's not anything you can do about that. So everything just kind of, everybody looks the same.
You just gotta pay attention.
Yeah, you may think you're watching your line, but you already crashed into a wall 4 hours ago. Sucks to be you. One interesting thing is that there were 16 color schemes. So you can't set the color for your own line, but you can change 16 different color schemes for the game overall. If you don't play with hot pink, what the fuck is wrong with you? No, you have to play with pink. That's just, I don't know why they made the other 15.
Okay, I'll go back and change it to pink.
The rice one is pretty too, oddly enough, but it's pink or get the fuck out.
I like blue though.
Blue is the stand. Everybody likes blue. Yeah. Or green, because green's the most popular favorite color. And bleh. But
really? I thought blue was the most popular favorite color.
Nope, it's green. You're welcome for that little information for color theory today. you know, back to the game.
Anyway, speaking of this.
You do have the ability to clear obstacles in front of you. So if you don't die immediately from dumb fuckery, then... You find yourself in a tight spot. You're either going to eat your own tail or eat somebody else's tail if they didn't die immediately. You have the option to use a clear. Unfortunately, to keep the game going, if you're playing with like the default settings, you only get one. So use it wisely, because if you waste it, you're dead. Like I said, though, it is kind of for the sake of keeping the game short and not letting it drag on too long. If you have a whole bunch of clears, you can just keep constantly making your way, and then you're there for 3 hours later and you hate everybody else in the room playing with you. And if you wanted to do that, you just play Monopoly. I thought it was creative, but it is difficult because of not being able to tell which one's yours. There are a ton of different modes though, and the skill challenges are hard as fuck.
Oh my god, the fucking skill challenges.
Survival and skill challenge are the only two modes that can be played single player. Everything else requires at least one other person to get through. Those skill challenges are no joke. So they're broke down into like different little genres to test like how well you can move or how well you can shoot. The move ones are like these super slender little mazes that you have to get your snake through. No.
They are no joke. I think I made it through two of them.
Yeah, they're absolutely savage. And then the shooting ones, basically you're kind of teleporting your way through the levels. They have the wall and you have to hit these little blinking squares with your shot so that you can get to the next little box area. It's so hard to describe, and it's even harder to do.
Yeah, I think I made it through one of those.
I didn't even make it all the way through. Like, I kept getting to the end, and I was just like, I can't do this. I'm going to cry. Be right back. Going to go flood in tears. That's just all there was to it, because it was hard. On one hand, I want to say that I wish this game had online.
I can't even imagine how you would be able to do this online for how twitchy it is.
That's why I say on one hand. Yeah. On the other, it's so fucking hard, and I can't even, like, trust the controls to always do what they're supposed to. Sometimes you just hit a wall, and it doesn't matter what button you fucking pushed. I'd like to play it online so that I can yell at my friends for getting in my way.
So you have someone to blame.
Yeah, so I could blame, like, oh, if I hit a wall, it was lag. But it stuck with everybody in the same room with me. They can see that I just didn't even try to not hit the wall.
It's okay. They didn't either.
They didn't either because they couldn't find which one was fucking their line. My kids gave up on me. They were playing with me, and number one is like, I can't even figure out which one's me. So it was a shame. Because it's a pretty game, and I like that it has the whole 16 different colors and everything, but it's not really meant for everybody.
Yeah,
it's got a high learning curve.
Very niche game, very difficult game. I could see this being good at parties, so that people could have, you know, pass the controllers around. If there's, like, you know, 10 people hanging out, you just pass it around, see who can do really good at the game in the competitive scene. Single player, buying this game, even at just $8, I have a hard time recommending it because of how goddamn difficult it is.
I think the frustration factor makes it harder to play long term too, and that's what you have to do to get good at it.
Yeah. And even people who are into achievements, like, you're going to hate this game achievement wise. Mm-hmm. What is it? Like, the lowest number of points you need in survival for an achievement is 75. I think I made it to 15.
I had 4.
It is just so brutally, brutally difficult. This is one of those games where I think the developers just got so good at playing their own game because they played it so much that they
expected everybody else to be that good at it too.
Yeah, like, I would be surprised if anyone ever gets 1,000 achievement points in this game that didn't develop the game.
Yeah, I could see that. And that's unfortunate. Because, like I said, it's fun in theory.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't really execute well.
Well, so, overall, yeah. $8, what do you think?
I'm actually going to give it a deny it because it's just so hard. I don't think anybody's really going to enjoy it unless they have a ton of time to sink into getting good at it.
I'm going with a try it on it. I think it's cheap enough that if you have friends coming over for a party, it would be an entertaining game to play. Again, single player, unless you're a masochist, you're not going to have too much fun with it. Right. It's just so goddamn hard.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's supposed to be the appeal of it. It's just one of those, it's the Dark Souls of Snake.
No.
I can't wait to see that on a review quote. It's the Dark Souls of Snake.
We're just going to end the show. Is this the last review? Are we done?
That's
We're just
it.
Ending it here?
We're
okay,
done.
Okay, so that's the final words. Deadliners is a Dark Souls of Snake.
Okay.